You have something to add?
Aris didn't flinch, but he seemed to choose his words very, very carefully.
I have seen the effects of Feybane.
He nodded toward me.
It truly renders us unable to tap our power. If it's wielded against us in war or beyond it. If it is, we shall face it. I will not risk my people or family in testing out a theory.
It is no theory, Nuan said, that mechanical hand clicking and whirring as it curled into a fist. I would not stand here unless it had been proven without a doubt. A female of pride and hard work. Aris said,
I will take it.
It was the most dissent I'd ever heard him sound. Even more blinked at it. Baron studied his son with a scrutiny that made some small, small part of me wonder if Aris might have grown to be a good male if he'd had a different father. If one still lurked there, beneath centuries of poison. Because Aris. What had it been like for him under the mountain? What games had he played? What had he endured? Trapped for 49 years. I doubted he would risk such a thing happening again, even if it set him in opposition to his father. Or perhaps because of that. Baron only said,
No, you will not. Though I'm sure your brothers will be sorry to hear it.
Indeed, the other seemed rather put out that their first barrier to the throne wasn't about to risk his life in testing Nuan's solution. Rhys said simply,
Then don't take it. I will. My entire court will. As will my armies.
He gave a thankful nod to Nuan. Theson did the same, in thanks and dismissal, and the master tinkerer bowed once more and left.
At least you have armies to give it to,
Tamlin said mildly, breaking his roiling silence. A smile at me.
Though perhaps that was part of the plan. Disable my force while your own swept in. Or was it just to see my people suffer?
A headache was beginning to pound at my right temple. Those claws poked through his knuckles again.
Surely you knew that when you turned my forces on me, it would leave my people defenseless against Highburn.
I said nothing, even as I blocked the images from my mind.
You primed my court to fall,
Tamlin said with venomous quiet.
And it did. Those villages you wanted so badly to help rebuild, they're nothing more than cinders now.
I shut out that too. He'd said they'd remain untouched, that Highburn had promised.
And while you've been making antidotes and casting yourselves as saviors, I've been piecing together my forces, regaining their trust, their numbers, trying to gather my people in the east, where Highburn has not yet marched.
Nesta said dryly,
So you won't be taking the antidote then?
Tamlin ignored her, even as his claws sank into the arm of his chair. But I believed him, that he'd moved as many of his people as he could to the eastern edge of the territory. He'd said as much long before I'd returned home. Theson cleared his throat and said to Helion,
You said you had 2 suggestions based on the information you analyzed.
Helion shrugged, the sun catching in the embroidered gold thread of his tunic.
Indeed, though it seems Tamlin is already ahead of me. The spring court must be evacuated.
His amber eyes darted between Tarquin and Baron.
Surely your northern neighbors will welcome them?
Baron's lip curled.
We do not have the resources for such a thing.
Right, Vivian said. Because everyone's too busy polishing every jewel in that trove of yours. Baron threw her a glare that had Calais tensing.
Wives were invited as a courtesy, not as consultants.
Vivian's sapphire eyes flared as if struck by lightning.
If this war goes poorly, we'll be bleeding out right alongside you, so I think we damn well get a say in things.
Highburn will do far worse things than kill you,
Baron countered coolly.
A young, pretty thing like you especially.
Callias's snarl rippled the water in the reflection pool, echoed by Moore's own growl. Baron smiled a bit.
Only three of us were present for the last war.
A nod to Rhys and Helion, whose face darkened.
One does not easily forget what Highburn and the Loyalists did to captured females in their war camps. What they reserved for High Fae females who either fought for the humans or had families who did.
He put a heavy hand on his wife's too thin arm.
Her two sisters bought her time to run when Highburn's forces ambushed their lands. The two ladies did not walk out of that war camp again.
Helion was watching Baron closely, his stare simmering with reproach. The Lady of the Autumn Court kept her focus on the reflection pool. Any trace of color drained from her face. Dagdan and Branna flashed through my mind, along with the corpses of those humans. What they'd done to them, before and after they died.
We will take your people.
Tarquin cut in quietly to Tamlin.
Regardless of your involvement with Highburn, your people are innocent. There is plenty of room in my territory. We will take all of them, if need be.
A curt nod was Tamlin's only acknowledgement and gratitude. Baron said,
So the seasonal courts are to become the charnel houses and hostels, while the solar courts remain pristine here in the north?
Highburn has focused its efforts on the southern half,
Rhys said,
to be close to the wall and human lands.
At this, Nesta and I exchanged looks. Rhys went on.
Why bother to go through the northern climes, through fairy territories on the continent when you could claim the south and use it to go directly to the human lands of the continent?
Theisen asked,
And you believe the human armies there will bow to Highburn?
Its queens sold us out, Nesta said.
She lifted her chin, poised as any emissary. For the gift of immortality, the human queens will allow Highburn in to sweep away any resistance. They might very well hand over control of their armies to him. Nesta looked to me, to Rhys. Where do the humans on our island go? We cannot evacuate them to the continent, and with the wall intact, many might rather risk waiting than cross over the wall anyway.
The fate of the humans below the wall,
Baron cut in,
is none of our concern, especially in a spit of land with no queen, no army.
It is my concern, I said, and the voice that came out of me was not Feyre the Huntress or Feyre the Cursebreaker, but Feyre the High Lady.
Humans are nearly defenseless against our kind.
So go waste your own soldiers defending them,
Baron said.
I will not send my own forces to protect chattel.
My blood heated, and I took a breath to cool it, to cool the magic crackling at the insult. It did nothing. If it was this impossible to get all of them to ally against Highburn...
You're a coward, I breathed to the High Lord of Autumn. Even Rhys tensed.
Baron just said,
The same could be claimed of you.
My stomach churned. I don't need to explain myself to you.
No, but perhaps to that girl's family. But they're dead too, aren't they? Butchered and burned to death in their own beds. Funny that you should now seek to defend humans, when you are all too happy to offer them up to save yourself.
My palms heated, as if twin suns built and swirled beneath them.
Easy, Rhys purred. He's a cranky old bastard.
But I could barely hear the words behind the tangle of images. Claire's mutilated body nailed to the wall. The cinders of the bedder's house staining the snow like wisps of shadow. The smile of the adder as it hauled me through those stone halls under the mountain.
As my lady said,
Rhys drawled,
she does not need to explain herself to you.
Baron leaned back in his chair.
Then I suppose I don't need to explain my motivations either.
Rhys lifted a brow.
Your staggering generosity aside, will you be joining our forces? I have not yet decided.
Aerys went so far as to give his father a look bordering on reproach. From genuine alarm, or for what that refusal might mean for our own covert alliance, I couldn't tell.
Armies take time to raise,
Cassian said.
You don't have the luxury of sitting on your ass. You need to rally your soldiers now.
Baron only sneered.
I don't take orders from the bastards of lesser fey whores.
My heartbeat was so wild I could hear it in every corner of my body, feel it pounding in my arms, my gut. But it was nothing compared to the wrath on Cassian's face, or the icy rage on Asriel's and Rhys's, and the disgust on Moore's.
That bastard,
Nesta said with utter coolness, though her eyes began to burn,
may wind up being the only person standing in the way of Highburn's forces and your people.
She didn't so much as look at Cassian as she said it, but he stared at her, as if he'd never seen her before. This argument was pointless, and I didn't care who they were or who I was as I said to Baron, get out if you're not going to be helpful. At his side, Aerys had the wits to actually look worried, but Baron continued to ignore his son's pointed stare and hissed at me.
Did you know that while your mate was warming Amarantha's bed, most of our people were locked beneath that mountain?
I didn't deign responding.
Did you know that while he had his head between her legs, most of us were fighting to keep our families from becoming the nightly entertainment?
I tried to shut out the images, the blinding fury at what had been done, what he'd done to keep Amarantha distracted. The secrets he still kept from shame or disinterest in sharing, I didn't know. Cassian was now trembling two seats down, with restraint. And Rhys said nothing. Tarquin murmured,
that's enough, Baron.
Tarquin, who had guessed at Rhysand's sacrifice, his motives. Baron ignored him.
And now Rhysand wants to play hero. Amarantha's whore becomes Highburn's destroyer. But if it goes badly,
a cruel, cold smile,
will he get on his knees for Highburn? Or just spread his?
I stopped hearing the words, stopped hearing anything other than my heart, my breathing. Fire exploded out of me. Raging, white-hot flame that blasted into Baron like a lance. Chapter 46. Baron shielded barely fast enough to block me, but the wake singed Aerys's arm right through the cloth, and the pale, lovely arm of Lucian's mother. The others shouted, shooting to their feet, but I couldn't think. Couldn't hear anything but Aerys's words. See those moments under the mountain. See that nightmare of Amarantha leading Rhys down the hall. What Rhys had endured.
Feyre.
I ignored it as I stood, and sent a wave of water from the reflection pond to encircle Baron and his chair. A bubble without air. Flame pounded against it, turning water to steam, but I pushed harder. I'd kill him. Kill him and gladly be done with it.
Feyre.
I couldn't tell if Rhysand was yelling it, if he was murmuring it down the bond. Maybe both. Baron's flame barrier slammed into my water, hard enough that ripples began to form, steam hissing among them. So I bared my teeth and sent a fist of white light punching into that fiery shield. the white light of day. Spellbreaker. Ward Cleaver. Baron's eyes widened as his shields began to fray, as that water pushed in. Then hands were on my face, and violet eyes were before mine, calm and yet insistent.
You've proved your point, my love,
Rhys said.
Kill him, and that horrible heiress will take his place.
Then I'll kill all of them.
As interesting an experiment as that might be, Rhys crooned, it would only complicate the matters at hand.
Into my mind, he whispered, I love you. The words of that hateful bastard don't mean anything. He has nothing of joy in this life, nothing good. We do.
I began to hear things. The trickling water of the pool, the crackle of flames, the quick breathing of those around us, the cursing of Baron trapped in that tightening cocoon of light and water.
I love you, Rhys said again, and I let go of my magic. Baron's flames exploded like an unfurling flower and bounced harmlessly off the shield Rhys had thrown around us. Not to shield against Baron, but the other High Lords were now on their feet.
That was how you got through my wards, Tarquin murmured.
Baron was panting so hard he looked like he might spew fire, but Helion rubbed his jaw as he sat down once more.
I wondered where it went, that little bit. So small, like a fish missing a single scale. But I still felt whenever something brushed against that empty spot.
A smirk at Rhys.
No wonder you made her High Lady.
I made her High Lady, Rhys said simply, lowering his hands from my face but not leaving my side. Because I love her. Her power was the last thing I considered. I was beyond words, beyond basic feelings. Helion asked Tamlin,
You knew of her powers?
Tamlin was only watching me and Rhys, my mate's declaration hanging between us.
It was none of your business,
was all Tamlin said to Helion, to all of them.
The power belongs to us. I think it is,
Baron seethed. Moore leveled a look at Baron that would have sent lesser males running. The Lady of Autumn was clutching her arm, angry red splattered along the moon-white skin. No glimmer of pain on that face, though. I said to her as I reclaimed my seat, I'm sorry. Her eyes lifted toward mine, round as saucers. Baron spat.
Don't talk to her, you human filth.
Rhys shattered through Baron's shield, his fire, his defenses, shattered through them like a stone hurled into a window, and slammed his dark power into Baron so hard he rocked back in his seat. Then that seat disintegrated into black, sparkling dust beneath him, leaving Baron to fall on his ass. Glittering ebony dust drifted away on a phantom wind, staining Baron's crimson jacket, clinging like clumps of ash to his brown hair.
Don't ever,
Rhys said, hands sliding into his pockets.
Speak to my mate like that again.
Baron shot to his feet, not bothering to brush off the dust, and declared to no one in particular,
This meeting is over. I hope Highburn butchers you all.
But Nesta rose from her chair.
This meeting is not over.
Even Baron paused at her tone. Eris sized up the space between my sister and his father. She stood tall, a pillar of steel.
You are all there is,
she said to Baron, to all of us.
You are all that there is between Highburn and the end of everything that is good and decent.
She settled her stare on Baron, unflinching and fierce.
You fought against Highburn in the last war. Why do you refuse to do so now?
Baron did not deign to answer, but he did not leave. Eris subtly motioned his brothers to sit. Nesta marked the gesture, hesitated, as if realizing she indeed held their complete attention, that every word mattered.
You may hate us. I don't care if you do. But I do care if you let innocents suffer and die. At least stand for them, your people. For Highburn will make an example of them, of all of us.
And you know this. How?
Baron sneered.
I went into the cauldron, Nesta said flatly. It showed me his heart. He will bring down the wall and butcher those on either side of it.
Truth or lie, I could not tell. Nesta's face revealed nothing, and no one dared contradict her. She looked to Callias and Vivian.
I am sorry for the loss of those children. The loss of one is abhorrent.
She shook her head.
But beneath the wall, I witnessed children, entire families, starve to death.
She jerked her chin at me.
Were it not for my sister, I would be among them.
My eyes burned, but I blinked it away.
Too long, Nesta said. For too long have humans beneath the wall suffered and died, while you and Prithian thrived. Not during that queen's reign.
She recoiled as if hating to even speak Amarantha's name.
But long before. If you fight for anything, fight now. To protect those you forgot. Let them know they're not forgotten. Just this once.
Theston cleared his throat. While a noble sentiment, the details of the treaty did not demand we provide for our human neighbors. They were to be left alone, so we obeyed. Nesta remained standing.
The past is the past. What I care about is the road ahead. What I care about is making sure no children, fey or human, are harmed. You have been entrusted with protecting this land.
She scanned the faces around her.
How can you not fight for it?
She looked to Baron and his family as she finished. Only the lady and heiress seemed to be considering, impressed even by the strange, simmering woman before them.
I didn't have the words in me to convey what was in my heart. Cassian seemed the same.
Baron only said,
I shall consider it.
A look at his family, and they vanished.
Eris was the last to winnow. Something conflicted dancing over his face, as if this was not the outcome he'd planned for, expected. But then he too was gone. The space where they'd been, empty, save for that black, glittering dust.
Slowly Nesta sat, her face again cold, as if it were a mask to conceal whatever raged in her at Baron's disappearance. Callias asked me quietly,
Did you master the ice?
I gave a shallow nod. All of it. Callias scrubbed at his face as Vivian set a hand on his arm.
Does it make a difference, Cal?
I don't know, he admitted.
That fast, this alliance unraveled. That fast, because of my lack of control, my...
It either would have been this or something else,
Rhys said from where he stood beside my chair, one hand toying with the glittering panels on the back of my gown.
Better now than later.
Callias won't break. He just needs to sort it through on his own. But Tarquin said,
You saved us under the mountain. Losing a kernel of power seems a worthy payment.
It seems she took far more than that,
Helion argued.
If she could be within seconds of drowning Baron despite the wards.
Perhaps I'd gotten around them simply by being made, outside anything the wards knew to recognize. Helion's power, warm and clear, brushed against the shield, trawling through the air between us, as if testing for a tether. As if I were some parasite, leeching power from him, and he'd gladly sever it. Theston declared,
What's done is done. Short of killing her.
Rhys's power roiled through the room at the words.
There is nothing we can do.
It wasn't entirely placating, his tone. Words of peace, yet the tone was terse. As if, were it not for Rhys and his power, he'd consider tying me down on an altar and cutting me open to see where his power was and how to take it back. I stood looking Theson in the eye, then Helion, Tarquin, Calias, exactly as Nesta had done. I did not take your power. You gave it to me, along with the gift of my immortal life. I am grateful for both, but they are mine now, and I will do with them what I will. My friends had risen to their feet, now in rank behind me, Nesta at my left. Rhys stepped to my right, but did not touch me. Let me stand on my own, stare them all down. I said quietly, but not weakly, I will use these powers, my powers, to smash Hybern to bits. I will burn them, and drown them, and freeze them. I will use these powers to heal the injured, to shatter through Hybern's wards. I have done so already, and I will do so again. And if you think that my possession of a kernel of your magic is your biggest problem, then your priorities are severely out of order. Pride flickered down the bond. The High Lords and their retinues said nothing. But Vivian nodded, chin high, and rose. I will fight with you. Cressida stood a heartbeat later. As will I. Both of them looked to the males in their court. Tarquin and Calias rose, then Helion, smirking at me and Rhys. And finally, Theson. Theson and Tamlin, who did not so much as breathe in my direction, had barely moved or spoken these past few minutes. It was the least of my concerns, so long as they were all standing.
6 out of 7.
Rhys chuckled down the bond.
Not bad, Cursebreaker. Not bad at all.
Chapter 47. Our alliance did not begin well. Even though we talked for a good 2 hours afterward, the bickering, the back and forth, continued. With Tamlin there, none would declare what numbers they had, what weapons, what weaknesses. As the afternoon slipped into evening, Theson pushed back his chair.
You are all welcome to stay the night and resume this discussion in the morning, unless you wish to return to your own homes for the evening.
We're staying,
Rhysand said.
I need to talk to some of the others alone.
Indeed, the others seemed to have similar thoughts, for all decided to stay, even Tamlin. We were shown toward the suites appointed for us, the sunstone turning a deep gold in the late afternoon sun. Tamlin was escorted away first, by Theson himself and a trembling attendant. He had wisely chosen not to attack Rhys or me during the debating, though his refusal to even acknowledge us did not go unnoticed. And as he left, back stiff and steps clipped, he did not say a word. Good. Then Tarquin was led out, then Helion, until only Calias's party and our own waited. Rhys rose from his seat and dragged a hand through his hair.
That went well. It would seem none of us won our bet about who'd fight first.
Asriel stared at the floor, stone-faced.
Sorry.
The word was emotionless, distant. He had not spoken, had barely moved since his savage attack. It had taken more 30 minutes after it to stop shaking.
He had it coming, Vivian said. Eris is a piece of shit.
Calias turned to his mate with high brows.
What?
She put a hand on her chest.
He is.
Be that as it may, Calias said with cool humor. The question remains about whether Baron will fight with us.
If all the others are allying, Moore said hoarsely, her first words in hours. Baron will join. He's too smart to risk siding with Highburn and losing. And I'm sure if things go badly, he'll easily switch over.
Rhys nodded, but faced Kallias. How many troops do you have?
Not enough. Amarantha did her job well.
Again, that ripple of guilt that pulsed down the bond.
We've got the army that Viv commanded and hid, but not much else. You?
Rhys didn't reveal a whisper of the tension that tightened in me, as if it were my own.
We have sizable forces. Mostly Illyrian legions, and a few thousand Darkbringers. But we'll need every soldier who can march.
Vivian walked to where Moore remained seated, still pale, and braced her hands on my friend's shoulders. I always knew we'd fight along each other one day. Moore dragged her brown eyes up, but she glanced toward Kallias, who seemed to be trying his best not to appear worried. Moore gave the High Lord a look as if to say, I'll take care of her, before she smiled at Vivian.
It's almost enough to make me feel bad for Highburn.
Almost, Vivian grinned wickedly.
But not quite.
We were led to a suite built around a lavish sitting area and private dining room, all of it carved from that sunstone, bedecked in jewel-toned fabrics, broad cushions clumped along the thick carpets, and overlooked by ornate golden cages filled with birds of all shapes and sizes. I'd spied peacocks parading about the countless courtyards and gardens as we'd walked through Thiessen's home, some preening in the shade beneath potted fig trees. How did Thiessen keep Amarantha from trashing this place? I asked Rhys as we surveyed the sitting room that opened to the hazy sprawl of countryside far, far below.
It's his private residence.
Rhys dismissed his wings and slumped onto a pile of emerald cushions near the darkened fireplace.
He likely shielded it the same way Kallias and I did.
A decision that would weigh heavily on them for many centuries, I had no doubt. But I looked to Azriel, currently leaning against the wall beside the floor-to-ceiling windows, shadows fluttering around him. Even the birds in their cages nearby remained silent. I said down the bond, Is he all right? Rhys tucked his hands behind his head, though his mouth tightened.
Likely not, but if we try to talk to him about it, it'll only make it worse.
Moore was indeed sprawled on a couch, one wary eye on Azriel. Cassian sat beside her, holding her feet in his lap. He'd taken the spot closer to Azriel, right between them, as if he'd leap into their path if need be.
You handled it beautifully, Rhys added. All of it.
Despite my explosion?
Because of your explosion.
I met his stare, sensing the emotions swirling beneath as I claimed a seat in an overstuffed chair near my mate's pillow mound.
I knew that you were powerful, but I didn't realize that you had such an advantage on the others.
Rhys's eyes shuddered, even as he gave me a half-smile.
I'm not sure even Baron knew until today. Suspected, maybe, but he'll now be wishing he'd found a way to kill me in the cradle.
A shiver skittered down my spine. He knows about Elaine being Lucian's mate. He makes a move to harm or take her, and he's dead. Uncompromising will swept over the stars in his eyes.
I'll kill him myself if he does, or hold him long enough for you to do the job. I think I'd enjoy watching you.
I'll keep it in mind for your next birthday. I drummed my fingers on the polished arm of the chair, the wood as smooth as glass. Do you really believe Tamlin's claim that he's been working for our side?
Yes.
A beat of silence down the bond.
And perhaps we did him a disservice by not even considering the possibility. Perhaps even I started to think him some warrior brute.
I felt tired,
in my bones, my breath. Does it change anything, though?
In some ways, yes. In others...
Rhys surveyed me.
No. No, it does not.
I blinked, realizing I'd been lost in the bond, but found Asriel still by the window, Cassian now rubbing Moore's feet. Nesta had retired to her own room without a word, and remained there. I wondered if Baron's leaving, despite her words, perhaps it had thrown her. I got to my feet, straightening the folds of my shimmering gown. I should check on Nesta. Talk to her. Rhys nestled deeper into his spread of pillows, tucking his hands behind his head.
She did well today.
Pride fluttered at the praise as I crossed the room, but I got as far as the foyer archway when a knock thudded on the door that opened into the sunny hallway. I halted, the sheer panels of my dress swaying, sparkling like pale blue fire in the golden light.
Don't open it, Moore warned from her spot on the couch. Even with the shield, don't open it.
Rhys uncoiled to his feet.
Wise,
he said, prowling past me to the front door.
But unnecessary.
He opened the door, revealing Helion, alone. Helion braced a hand on the doorframe and grinned.
How do you convince Theson to give you the better view? He finds my males to be prettier than yours, I think. I think it's a wing fetish.
Rhys laughed and opened the door wider, beckoning him in.
You've really mastered this swaggering prick performance, by the way. Expertly done.
Helion's robe swayed with his graceful steps, brushing his powerful thighs. He spied me standing by the round table in the center of the foyer and bowed, deeply.
Apologies for the bastard act, he said to me. Old habits and all.
Here it was, the amusement and joy in his amber eyes, the lightness that led to my own glow when lost to pure bliss. Helion frowned at Rhys.
You were on unnaturally nice behavior today. I was betting Baron would be dead by the end of it. You can't imagine my shock that he walked out alive.
My mate suggested it would be in our favor to appear as we truly are.
Well, now I look as bad as Baron.
He strode straight past me with a wink, stalking into the sitting room. He grinned at Asriel.
You handing Eris's ass to him will be my new fantasy at night, by the way.
Asriel didn't so much as bother to look over his shoulder at the High Lord, but Cassian snorted.
I was wondering when the come-ons would begin.
Helion threw himself onto the couch across from Cassian and Moore. He ditched that radiant crown somewhere, but kept that gold armband of the upright serpent.
It's been, what, 4 centuries now, and you three still haven't accepted my offer.
Moore lolled her head to the side.
I don't like to share, unfortunately.
You never know until you try,
Helion purred.
The three of them in bed.
With him? I must have been blinking like a fool, because Rhys said to me, Helion favors both males and females, usually together in his bed, and has been hounding after that trio for centuries. I considered. Helion's beauty and the others.
Why the hell haven't they said yes?
Rhys barked a laugh that had all of them looking at him with raised brows. My mate just came up behind me and slid his arms around my waist, pressing a kiss to my neck.
Would you like someone to join us in bed, Feyre, darling?
My skin stretched tight over my bones at the tone, the suggestion.
You're incorrigible. I think you'd like two males worshipping you.
My toes curled. Moore cleared her throat.
Whatever you're saying, mind to mind, either share it or go to another room so we don't have to sit here stewing in your sense.
I stuck out my tongue.
Rhys laughed again, kissing my neck once more before saying, "Apologies for offending your delicate sensibilities, cousin."
I pushed out of his embrace, out of the touch that still made me dizzy enough that basic thought became difficult, and claimed a chair adjacent to Moore and Cassian's couch. Cassian said to Helion,
"Are your forces ready?"
Helion's amusement faded, reshaping into that hard, calculating exterior.
"Yes. They'll rendezvous with yours in the Myrmidons."
The mountain range we shared at our border. He'd refused to divulge such information earlier.
"Good,"
Cassian said, rubbing at the arch of Moore's foot.
"We'll push south from there."
"With the final encampment being where?" Moore asked, withdrawing her foot from Cassian's hands and tucking both feet beneath her. Helion traced the curve of her bare leg, his amber eyes a bit glazed as he met hers. Moore didn't balk from the heated look, and a keen sort of awareness seemed to overtake her, like every nerve in her body shook awake. I didn't dare look toward Asriel. There must have been multiple shields around the room, around every crack and opening where spying eyes and ears might be waiting, because Cassian said,
"We join Theseus's forces, then eventually make camp along Calais's southwestern border, near the summer court."
Helion drew his gaze from Moore long enough to ask Rhys,
"You and pretty Tarquin had a moment today. Do you truly think he'll join us?"
"If you mean in bed, definitely not,"
Rhys said with a wry smile as he again sprawled on his spread of cushions.
"But if you mean in this war, yes, I believe he means to fight. Baron, on the other hand."
"Highburn is focusing on the south," Helion said.
"And regardless of what you think Tamlin's up to, the Spring Court is now mostly occupied. Baron has to realize his court will be a battleground if he doesn't join us to push southward, especially if Summer has joined us."
Meaning the Spring Court and human lands would see the brunt of the battles. "Will Baron choose to listen to reason, though?" Moore mused. Helion tapped a finger against the carved arm of his couch. "He played games in the war, and it cost him dearly. His people still remember those choices, those losses. His own damn wife remembers." Helion had looked at the Lady of Autumn repeatedly during the meeting. I asked, carefully and casually, "What do you mean?" Moore shook her head, not at what I'd said, but at whatever had occurred.
Helion fixed his full attention upon me. It was an effort not to flinch at the weight of that focus, the simmering intensity.
The muscled body was only a mask to hide that cunning mind beneath. I wondered if Rhys had picked that up from him. Helion folded an ankle over a knee.
"The Lady of the Autumn Court's two older sisters were indeed,"
he searched for a word,
"butchered. Tormented and then butchered. During the war."
I shut out Nesta's screaming, shut out Elaine's sobbing as she was hauled toward that cauldron. Lucian's aunts, dead before he'd ever existed. Had his mother ever told him this story? Rhys explained to me,
"Hybern's forces had swarmed our lands by that point."
Helion's jaw clenched.
"The Lady of the Autumn Court was sent to stay with her sisters. Her younger children packed off to other relatives, to spread out the bloodline."
He dragged a hand through his sable hair.
"Highburn attacked their estate. Her sisters bought her time to run. Not because she was married to Baron, but because they loved each other. Fiercely. She tried to stay, but they convinced her to go. So she did. She ran and ran, but Highburn's beasts were still faster. Stronger. They cornered her at a ravine, where she became trapped atop a ledge, the beasts snapping at her feet."
He didn't speak for a long moment. Too many details. He knew so many details. I said quietly, "You saved her."
You found her, didn't you?
A coronet of light seemed to flicker over that thick black hair.
I did.
There was enough weight, anger, and something else in those two words that I studied the High Lord of Day.
What happened?
Helion didn't break my stare. I tore the beasts apart with my bare hands.
A chill slid down my spine.
Why? He could have ended it 1,000 other ways. Easier ways. Cleaner ways. Rhys's bloody hands after the raven's attack flashed through my mind. Helion didn't so much as shift in his chair.
She was still young. Though she'd been married to that delightful male for nearly 2 decades. Married too young. The marriage arranged when she was 20.
The words were clipped. And 20, so young. Nearly as young as Moore had been when her own family tried to marry her to Eris.
So?
A dangerous, taunting question. And how his eyes burned at that, flaring bright as suns. But it was Moore who said, coolly,
I heard a rumor once, Helion, that she waited before agreeing to that marriage for a certain someone who had met her by chance at an equinox ball the year before.
I tried not to blink, not to let any of my rising interest surface. The fire banked to embers, and Helion threw a half smile in Moore's direction.
Interesting. I heard her family wanted internal ties to power, and that they didn't give her a choice before they sold her to Baron.
Sold her. Moore's nostrils flared. Cassian ran a hand down the back of her hair. Asriel didn't so much as turn from his vigil at the window, though I could have sworn his wings tucked in a bit tighter.
Too bad they're just rumors, Rhys cut in smoothly, and can't be confirmed by anyone.
Helion merely toyed with the gold cuff on his sculpted arm, twisting the serpent to the center of his bicep. But I furrowed my brows.
Does Baron know you saved his wife in the war?
He hadn't mentioned anything during the meeting. Helion let out a dark laugh.
Cauldron, no!
There was enough wry, knowing humor that I straightened.
You had an affair after you rescued her?
The amusement only grew, and Helion pushed a finger against his lips in mock warning.
Careful, High Lady. Even the birds report to Theseon here.
I frowned at the birds in cages throughout the room, still silent in Asriel's shadowy presence.
I threw shields around them, Rhys said down the bond.
How long did the affair last? I asked. That withdrawn female. I couldn't imagine it. Helion snorted.
Is that a polite question for a high lady to be asking?
But the way he spoke, that smile. I only waited, using silence to push him instead. Helion shrugged.
On and off for decades. Until Baron found out. They say the lady was all brightness and smiles before that. And after Baron was through with her, you saw what she is.
What did he do to her?
The same thing he does now.
Helion waved a hand.
Belittle her. Leave bruises where no one but him will see them.
I clenched my teeth. If you were her lover, why didn't you stop it? The wrong thing to say. Utterly wrong by the dark fury that rippled across Helion's face.
Baron is a high lord, and she is his wife, mother of his brood. She chose to stay. Chose. And with the protocols and rules, lady, you will find that most situations like the one you were in do not end well for those who interfere.
I didn't back down, didn't apologize.
You barely even looked at her today.
We have more important matters at hand.
Baron never called you out for it?
To publicly do so would be to admit that his possession made a fool of him. So we continue our little dance, these centuries later. I somehow doubted that beneath that roguish charm and irreverence, Helion felt it was a dance at all. But if it had ended centuries ago, and she'd never seen him again, had let Baron treat her so abominably.
Whatever you've just figured out, Rhys said, you'd better stop looking so shocked by it.
I forced a smile to my face.
You High Lords really do love your melodrama, don't you?
Helion's own smile didn't reach his eyes, but Rhys asked,
in your libraries, have you ever encountered a mention of how the wall might be repaired?
Helion began asking why we wanted to know, what Highburn was doing with the cauldron, and Rhys fed him answers easily and smoothly. While we spoke, I said down the bond,
Helion is Lucian's father.
Rhys was silent, then,
holy burning hell.
His shock was a shooting star between us. I let my gaze dart through the room, half paying attention to Helion's musing on the wall and how to repair it, then dared study the High Lord for a heartbeat.
Look at him. The nose is the same, the smile, the voice. Even Lucian's skin is darker than his brother's.
A golden brown compared to their pale coloring.
It would explain why his father and brothers detest him so much. Why they've tormented him his entire life.
My heart squeezed at that.
And why Aerys didn't want him dead. He wasn't a threat to Aerys's power, his throne.
I swallowed.
Helion has no idea, does he?
It would seem not.
The Lady of the Autumn's favorite son, not only from Lucian's goodness, but because he was the child she dreamed of having, with the male she undoubtedly loved.
Baron must have discovered the affair when she was pregnant with Lucian.
He likely suspected, but there was no way to prove it. Not if she was sharing his bed, too.
Rhys's disgust was a tang in my mouth.
I have no doubt Baron debated killing her for the betrayal, and even afterward, when Lucian could be passable as his own offspring, just enough to make him doubt who had sired his last son.
I wrapped my head around it. Lucian, not Baron's son, but Helion's.
His power is flame, though.
They've mused Baron's title could go to him.
His mother's family is strong. That was why Baron wanted a bride from their line. The gift could be hers.
You never suspected?
Not once. I'm mortified I didn't even consider it.
What does this mean, though?
Nothing. Ultimately nothing. Other than the fact that Lucian might be Helion's sole heir.
And that...
It changed nothing in this war, especially not with Lucian on the continent, hunting that enchanted queen.
A bird of flame, and a lord of fire.
I wondered if they'd found each other yet.
A door opened and shut in the foyer beyond, and I braced myself as Nesta appeared. Helion paused his debating the wall to survey her carefully, as he had done earlier.
Spell Cleaver. That was his title.
She surveyed him with her usual disdain. But Helion gave her the same bow he'd offered me, though his smile was edged with enough sensuality that even my heart raced a bit. No wonder the Lady of Autumn hadn't stood a chance.
I don't think we were introduced properly earlier, he crooned to Nesta.
I don't care. Nesta said with a snap of her wrist, striding right past him and up to my side. I'd like a word, she said. Now.
Cassian was biting his knuckle to keep from laughing, at the utter surprise and shock on Helion's face. It wasn't every day, I supposed, that anyone of either sex dismissed him so thoroughly. I threw the High Lord a semi-apologetic glance,
and led my sister out of the room.
"What is it?" I asked, when Nesta and I had entered her bedroom, the space bedecked in pink silk and gold, accents of ivory scattered throughout. The lavishness of it indeed put our various homes to shame.
"We need to leave," Nesta said. "Right now."
Every sense went on alert.
"Why?"
"It feels wrong. Something feels wrong."
I studied her. The clear sky beyond the towering drape-framed windows.
"Rhys and the others would sense it. You're likely just picking up on all the power gathered here."
"Something is wrong," Nesta insisted.
"I'm not doubting you feel that way, but if none of the others are picking it up..."
"I'm not like the others."
Her throat bobbed.
"We need to leave."
"I can send you back to Valaris, but we have things to discuss here."
"I don't care about me, I..."
The door opened and Cassian stalked in, face grave. The sight of the wings, the Illyrian armor in this opulent, pink-filled room, planted itself in my mind, the painting already taking form, as he said,
"What's wrong?"
He studied every inch of her, as if there was nothing and no one else here, anywhere. But I said,
"She senses something is off. Says we need to leave right away."
I waited for the dismissal, but Cassian angled his head.
"What precisely feels wrong?"
Nesta stiffened, mouth pursing as she weighed his tone.
"It feels like there's this dread, this sense that I forgot something, but can't remember what."
Cassian stared at her for a moment longer.
"I'll tell Rhys."
And he did. Within moments, Rhys, Cassian, and Asriel had vanished, leaving Mor and Helion in alert silence. I waited with Nesta. 5 minutes. 10. 15. 30 minutes later, they returned, shaking their heads. Nothing. Not in the palace, not in the lands around it, not in the skies above or the earth below. Not for miles and miles, nothing. Rhys even checked with Amarin and found nothing amiss in Valaris. Elaine, mercifully, safe and sound. None of them, however, were stupid enough to suggest that Nesta had made it up. Not with that otherworldly power in her veins, or that perhaps the dread was a lingering effect of her time in Highburn, like the crushing panic that I'd struggled to face down, that still stalked me some nights. So we stayed. We ate in our private dining room, Helion joining us. No sign of Tarquin or Theseyn. Certainly not Tamlin. Kalias and Vivian appeared midway through the meal, and Mor kicked Cassian out of his seat to make space for her friend. They chatted and gossiped, even though Mor kept glancing at Helion. And the High Lord of Day kept glancing at her. Asriel barely spoke. Those shadows still perched on his shoulders. Mor barely looked at him. But we dined and drank for hours, until night was overhead. And though Rhys and Kalias were tense, careful around each other, by the end of the meal, they were at least talking. Nesta was the first to leave the table, still wary and on edge. The others made one final check of the grounds before we tumbled into the silk sheets of our cloud-soft beds. Rhys and I left Mor and Helion talking knee to knee on the sitting room cushions. Vivian and Kalias long returned to their suite. I had no idea where Asriel went off to, or Cassian for that matter. And when I emerged from washing up in the ivory and gold bathing room, and Helion's deep murmur and Mor's sultry laugh flitted in from the hall, when it moved past our door and then her door creaked open and closed, Rhysand's wings were folded in tightly as he surveyed the stars beyond the bedroom windows. Quieter and smaller here somehow. Why? He knew what I meant.
Mor gets spooked, and what Az did today scared the shit out of her.
The violence?
The violence as a result of what he feels. lingering guilt over the deal with Eris, and what neither of them will face.
Don't you think it's been long enough? And that taking Helion to bed is likely the worst possible thing to do?
But I had no doubt Helion needed a distraction as much as Moore did, from thinking too long about the people they loved, who they could not have.
Moore and Asriel have both taken lovers throughout the centuries, he said, wings shifting slightly. The only difference here is the close proximity.
You sound remarkably fine with this.
Rhys glanced over a shoulder to where I lingered by the foot of the massive ivory bed, its carved headboard fashioned after overlapping water lilies.
It's their life. Their relationship. They've both had plenty of opportunities to confess what they feel, yet they have not. Moore especially. For private reasons of her own, I'm sure. My meddling isn't going to make it any better.
But he loves her. How can he sit idly by?
He thinks she's happier without him.
His eyes shone with the memory of his own choice to sit back.
He thinks he's unworthy of her.
It seems like an Illyrian trait. Rhys snorted, returning to the stars. I came up to his side and slid my arm around his waist. He opened his arms to me, cupping my shoulder as I rested my head against that soft spot where his own shoulder met his chest. A heartbeat later, his wing curved around me too, enveloping me in his shadowed warmth.
There will come a day when Asriel has to decide if he's going to fight for her or let her go. And it won't be because some other male insults her or beds her.
And what about Cassian?
He's entangled and enabling this nonsense.
A wry smile.
Cassian is going to have to decide some things, too. In the near future, I think.
Are he and Nesta?
I don't know. Until the bond snaps into place, it can be hard to detect.
Rhys swallowed once, gaze fixed on the stars. I simply waited.
Tamlin still loves you, you know.
I know.
That was an ugly encounter.
All of it was ugly, I said.
What Baron and Tamlin had brought up with Amarantha, what Rhys had been forced to reveal.
Are you all right? I could still feel the clamminess of his hand upon mine as he spoke of what Amarantha had done. He brushed a thumb down my shoulder.
It wasn't easy.
He amended.
I thought I'd vomit all over the floor.
I squeezed him a little tighter. I'm sorry you had to share those things. Sorry for all of it, Rhys. I breathed in his scent, taking it deep into my lungs. Out. We had made it out.
And I know it likely means nothing, but I'm proud of you, that you were brave enough to tell them.
It doesn't mean nothing, he said softly. That you feel that way about me, about today.
He kissed my temple, and warmth flickered along the bond.
It means...
His wing curved closer around me.
I don't have the words to tell you what it means.
But as that love, that joy and light shimmered through the bond, I understood. He peered down at me.
And are you all right?
I nestled my head further into his chest.
I just feel tired. Sad. Sad that it turned so awful and yet
furious about everything that happened to me, to my sisters. I blew out a long breath. When I was back at the Spring Court, I swallowed. I looked for their wings. Rhys went utterly still, and I took his hand, squeezing hard as he only said,
"Did you find them?" The words were barely a brush of air. I shook my head, but said before the grief on his face could grow, I learned that he burned them long ago. Rhys said nothing for a lingering moment, his attention returning to the stars. Thank you for even thinking, for risking, to look for them. The only trace, the horrific remnants of his mother and sister. I'm glad he burned them, Rhys admitted. I could happily kill him for so many things, and yet... He rubbed his chest. I'm glad he offered them that peace, at least. I nodded. I know. I ran my thumb over the back of his hand. And perhaps because of the raw, stark quiet, I confessed, it feels strange to share a room. A bed, with you, under the same roof as him.
I can imagine.
For somewhere in this palace, Tamlin was lying in bed, well aware that I was about to enter this one with Rhysand. The past tangled and snarled, and I whispered, I don't think I can have sex here, with him so close. Rhys remained quiet. I'm sorry if...
You don't need to apologize. Ever.
I looked up, finding his gaze on me. Not angry or frustrated, but sad. Knowing. I want to share this bed with you, though, I breathed. I want you to hold me. Stars flickered to life in his eyes.
Always, he promised, kissing my brow, his wings now enveloping me completely. Always.
Chapter 48. Helion slipped from Moore's room before we were awake, though I certainly heard them throughout the night. Enough so that Rhys put a shield around our room. Azriel and Cassian didn't return at all. Moore didn't look like a female who had been tumbling with a gorgeous High Lord, however, as she picked at her breakfast. There was something vacant in her brown eyes, a paleness to her ordinarily golden skin. Cassian strutted in at last, greeting Moore with a chipper.
You look terrible. Helion keep you up all night?
She threw her spoon at him,
then her porridge.
Cassian caught the first and shielded against the other, his siphon blazing like an awakening ember. Porridge slid to the floor. Helion wanted you to join, she mildly replied, refilling her tea. Quite badly.
Maybe next time,
Cassian said, dropping into the seat beside me.
How's your sister?
She seemed fine, still worried. I didn't ask where he and Azriel had been all night, if only because I wasn't sure Moore wanted to hear the answer. Cassian served himself from the platters of fruits and pastries, frowning at the lack of meat.
Ready for another day full of arguing and plotting?
Moore and I grumbled. Rhys strode in, hair still damp from his bath, and grinned.
That's the spirit.
Despite the fraught day ahead, I smiled at my mate. He'd held me all night, tucked against his chest, his wing draped over me. A different sort of intimacy than sex. Deeper. Our souls entwined, holding tight. I'd awoken to his wing still over me, his breath tickling my ear. My throat had closed up as I'd studied his sleeping face, my chest tightening to the point of pain. I was well aware how wildly I loved him. But looking at him then, I felt it in every pore of my body, felt it as if it might crush me, consume me. And the next time someone insulted him. The thought was still prowling through my mind as we finished breakfast, dressed, and returned to that chamber atop the palace, to begin forming the backbone of this alliance.
I kept the crown from yesterday, but swapped my Starfall gown for one of glittering black, the dress made up of solid ebony silk overlaid with shimmering obsidian gossamer. Its skirts flowed behind me. The tight sleeves tapered to points that brushed the center of my hand, looped into place around my middle finger with an attached onyx ring. If I was a fallen star yesterday, today Reese's mysterious clothier had made me into the Queen of Night. The rest of my companions had dressed accordingly. Yesterday, we had been ourselves, open and friendly and caring. Today, we showed the other courts what we'd unleash upon our enemies, what we were capable of if provoked. Helion was back to his edged, swaggering aloofness, lounging in his chair as we entered that lovely chamber atop one of the palace's many gilded towers. He gave Moore an extra glance, lips curving in sensual amusement. He was resplendent today, in robes of cobalt, edged in gold, that offset his gleaming brown skin, golden sandals upon his feet. Azriel, shadows wafting from his shoulders and trailing at his feet, ignored him as he passed. The Shadow Singer hadn't shown a flicker of emotion, however, to Moore when he'd met us in the foyer. She hadn't asked where he'd been all night and morning, and Azriel had volunteered nothing. But he didn't seem inclined to ignore her, at least. No, he'd just settled back into his usual watchful quiet. And Moore had been content to let him, slumping a bit in relief as soon as he'd turned to lead us to the meeting, likely having already scouted the walk minutes ago. Thiessen was the only person who bothered to greet us when we passed through that wisteria-draped archway. But he took one look at our attire, our faces, and muttered a prayer to the cauldron. His lover, clad in his captain's armor once more, sized us up, his wings flaring slightly, but kept seated with the other peregrines. Tamlin arrived last, raking his gaze over all of us as he sat. I didn't bother to acknowledge him. And Helion didn't wait for Thiessen to beckon to begin. He merely crossed an ankle over a knee and said,
I thoroughly reviewed the charts and figures you've compiled, Tamlin. And?
Tamlin bit out. Today would go incredibly well, then.
And?
Helion said simply, no trace of the laughing, easy male of the night before.
If you can rally your forces quickly, you and Tarquin might be able to hold the front line long enough for those of us above the middle to bring the larger hosts.
It's not that easy, Tamlin said through his teeth.
I have a third of them left.
A seething look toward me. After Feyre destroyed their faith in me.
I had done that. In my rage, my need for vengeance. I hadn't thought long term. Hadn't considered that perhaps we would need that army, but... Nesta let out a breathy, sharp noise and surged from her chair. I lunged for her, nearly tripping over the skirts of my dress as she staggered back, a hand clutching at her chest. Another step would have taken her stumbling into the reflection pool, but Moore sprang forward, gripping her. What's wrong? Moore demanded, holding my sister upright as her face contorted in what looked to be pain, confusion, and... pain. Sweat beaded on Nesta's brow, though her face went deathly pale. Something. The word was cut off by a low groan. She sagged, and Moore caught her fully, scanning Nesta's face. Cassian was instantly there, his hand at her back, teeth bared at the invisible threat. Nesta, I said, reaching for her. Nesta seized, then twisted past Cassian to empty her stomach into the reflection pool. Poison? Callias asked, pushing Vivian behind him. She merely stepped around his arm. Tamlin remained seated, his jaw a hard line, monitoring us all. But Helion and Thiessen strode forward, grim and focused. Helion's power flickered around him like blinding bright fireflies,
darting to my sister, landing on her gently. Thiessen, glowing gold and rosy, laid a hand on Nesta's arm, healing.
"Nothing," they said together.
Nesta rested her head against Moore's shoulder, her breathing ragged.
"Something is wrong," she managed to say. "Not with me. Not me.
But with the cauldron."
Rhys was having some sort of silent conversation with Asriel and Cassian, the latter monitoring every breath my sister took. But the two Illyrians nodded to Rhys and began stalking for the open windows to fly out. Nesta moaned, body tensing as if she'd vomit again. But then, we felt it. A shuddering through the earth, through air and stone and green growing things, as if some great god blew a breath across the land. Then the impact came. Rhys threw himself over me so fast I didn't register wholly that the mountain itself shook, that the building swayed. We hit the stones as the debris rained, and I felt him readying to winnow. Then it stopped. Screaming rose up from the valley below. But silence reigned in the palace, amongst us. Nesta vomited again, and Moore let her sag to the floor this time.
"What in hell?"
Helion began. But Rhys hauled his body off mine, his tan face draining of color, his lips going bloodless as he stared southward. Far, far southward. I felt his magic spear from him, a shooting star across the land. And when he looked back at us, his eyes went right to me. It was the fear in them. The sorrow and fear that made my mouth go wholly dry. That made my blood run cold. Rhys swallowed. Once. Twice. Then he declared hoarsely,
"The King of Highburn just used the cauldron to attack the wall."
Murmuring. Some gasps. Rhys swallowed a third time, and the ground slid out from under me as he clarified.
"The wall is gone, shattered. Across Prithian and on the continent."
He said it again, as if convincing himself.
"We were too late. Too slow. Highburn just destroyed the wall."
Chapter 49. Nesta's connection to the cauldron, Rhys mused as we gathered around the dining table in the townhouse, had allowed her to sense that the King of Highburn was rallying its power. The same way I was able to wield the connection to the High Lords to track their traces of power and to find the book and cauldron, Nesta's own power, own immortality, was so closely bound to the cauldron that its dreadful presence, when awoken, brushed through her, too. That was why he hunted her. Not just for the power she'd taken, but for the fact that Nesta was a warning bell. We'd all departed the Dawn Court within minutes, Thiessen promising large shipments of Feybane antidote to every High Lord and army within 2 days, and that his peregrines would begin readying themselves under his captain's command to join the Illyrians in the skies. Calais and Helion swore their own terrestrial armies would march as soon as possible. Only Tamlin, whose southern border covered the entire wall, was unaccounted for. His armies in shambles. Helion just said to Tamlin before the latter left,
"Get your people out. Bring whatever host you can muster."
Whatever remained after me. Tarquin echoed the sentiment, along with his promise to offer safe harbor for the Spring Court. Tamlin didn't reply to either of them, didn't confirm that he would be bringing forces before he winnowed, without a glance at me. A small relief, since I hadn't decided whether to demand his sworn help or spit on him. Goodbyes were brief. Vivian had embraced more tightly, then me, to my surprise. Calais only clasped Rhys's hand, a taut, tentative gesture, and vanished with his mate.
then Helion with a wink at all of us. Tarquin was the last to go, Therion and Cressida flanking him. His armada, they'd decided, would be left to guard his own cities while the bulk of his soldiers would march on land. Tarquin's crushing blue eyes flared as his power rallied to winnow them, but Varian said to me, to Rhys, "Tell her thank you." He put a hand on his chest, the fine gold and silver thread of his teal jacket glinting in the morning sun.
"Tell her." The Prince of Adriada shook his head.
"I'll tell her myself the next time I see her." It seemed like more of a promise, that Varian would see Amryn again, war or no. Then they were gone. No word arrived from Baron before we uttered our farewells and gratitude to Theseyn. Not a whisper that Baron might have changed his mind, or that Aerys might have persuaded him. But that was not my concern, or Nesta's. If the wall had come down. Too late. We'd been too late. All of that research. I should have insisted that if Amryn deemed Nesta nearly ready, then we should have gone directly to the wall, seen what she could do, spell from the book or no. Perhaps it was my fault, for wanting to shelter her, build her strength, for letting her remain withdrawn. But if I had pushed and pushed... Even now, seated around the townhouse dining table in Valaris, I hadn't decided whether the potential of breaking my sister permanently was worth the cost of saving lives. I didn't know how Rhys and the others had made such decisions, for years, especially during Amarantha's reign. "We should have evacuated months ago," Nesta said, her plate of roast chicken and vegetables untouched. It was the first words any of us had spoken in minutes while we'd all picked at our food. Elaine had been told by Amryn. She now sat at the table, more straight-backed and clear-eyed than I'd seen her. Had she beheld this in whatever wanderings that new inner sight granted her? Had the cauldron whispered of it while we'd been away? I hadn't the heart to ask her. Rhys was saying to Nesta, "We can go to your estate tonight, evacuate your household, and bring them back here." "They will not come." "Then they will likely die." Nesta straightened her fork and knife beside her plate. "Can't you spirit them away somewhere south, far from here?" "That many people? Not without first finding a safe place, which would take time we don't have."
Rhys considered.
"If we get a ship, they can sail.
They will demand their families and friends come."
A beat of silence. Not an option. Then Elaine said quietly, "We could move them to Grayson's estate." We all faced her at the evenness of her voice. She swallowed, her slender throat so pale, and explained, "His father has high walls, made of thick stone, with space for plenty of people and supplies." All of us made a point not to look at the ring she still wore. Elaine went on. "His father has been planning for something like this for a long time. They have defenses, stores." A shallow breath. "And a grove of ash trees, with a cachet of weapons made from them." A snarl from Cassian. "Despite their power, their might. However those trees had been created, something in the ash wood cut right through Fae defenses. I'd seen it firsthand. Killed one of Tamlin's sentinels with an arrow through the throat."
"If the fairies who attack possess magic,"
Cassian said, and Elaine recoiled at the harsh tone.
"Then thick stone won't do much."
"There are escape tunnels," Elaine whispered. "Perhaps it is better than nothing."
A glance between the Illyrians.
"We can set up a guard,"
Cassian began.
"No,"
Elaine interrupted, her voice louder than I'd heard in months.
"They
Grayson and his father... Cassian's jaw tightened.
Then we cloak.
They have hounds. Bred and trained to hunt you. Detect you. A stiff silence as my friends contemplated how, exactly, those hounds had been trained.
You can't mean to leave their castle undefended.
Cassian tried a shade more gently.
Even with the ash, it won't be enough. We'd need to set wards at the very minimum.
Elaine considered. I can speak to him.
No,
I said, at the same moment Nesta did. But Elaine cut us off. If you and they, a glance at Rhys, my friends, come with me, your fey sense might distract the dogs.
Your fey too, Nesta reminded her.
Glamour me, Elaine said to Rhys. Make me look human. Just long enough to convince him to open his gates to those seeking sanctuary. Perhaps even let you set those wards around the estate. And with our sense to confuse the hounds. This could end very badly, Elaine. She brushed her thumb over the iron and diamond engagement ring. It's already ended badly. Now it's just a matter of deciding how we meet the consequences.
Wisely said, Moore offered, smiling softly at Elaine. She looked to Cassian. You need to move the Illyrian legions today.
Cassian nodded but said to Rhys,
With the wall down, we need you to make a few things clear to the Illyrians. I need you to go to the camp with me, to give one of your pretty speeches before we go.
Rhys's mouth twitched toward a smile.
We can all go, then head to the human lands.
He surveyed us, the townhouse. We have an hour to prepare. Meet back here, then we leave. Moore and Asriel instantly winnowed out, Cassian striding for Rhys to ask him about the Court of Nightmares, soldiers, and their preparation. Nesta and I aimed for Elaine, both of us speaking at once. Are you sure? I demanded at the same time Nesta said, I can go, let me talk to him. Elaine only rose to her feet. He doesn't know you, she said to me. Then she faced Nesta with a frank, bemused look. And he hates you. Some rotten part of me wondered if their broken engagement was for the best then, or if Elaine had somehow suggested this visit, right after Lucian had left Prithian, for some chance to... I didn't let myself finish the thought. I said, watching the space where my friends had vanished from the townhouse, I need you to understand, Elaine, that if this goes badly, if he tries to harm you or any of us, I know you will defend your own. I will defend you. The vacancy fogged over her eyes, but Elaine lifted her chin. No matter what, don't kill him. Please. We'll try. Swear it. I'd never heard that tone from her. Ever. I can't make that promise. I wouldn't back down, not on this. But I will do everything in my power to avoid it. Elaine seemed to realize it too. She peered down at herself, at the simple blue gown she wore. I need to dress. I'll help you, Nesta offered. But Elaine shook her head. Nuala and Caridwen will help me. Then she was gone, shoulders a little squarer. Nesta's throat bobbed. I murmured, It wasn't your fault, but the wall came down before we could stop it. Steel-filled eyes cut to me. If I had stayed to practice, then you just would have been here while you waited for us to return from the meeting. Nesta smoothed a hand down her dark dress. What do I do now? A purpose, I realized. Assigning her the task of finding a way to repair the holes in the wall, It had given my sister what perhaps our human lives had never granted her. A bearing.
You come with us, to Grayson's estate, and then travel with the army. If you're connected with the cauldron, then we'll need you close. Need you to tell us if it's being wielded again.
Not quite a mission, but Nesta nodded all the same.
Right as Cassian clapped Rhys on the shoulder and prowled toward us. He paused a foot away and frowned.
Dresses aren't good for flying, ladies.
Nesta didn't reply. He lifted a brow.
No barking and biting today.
But Nesta didn't rise to meet him, her face still drained and sallow. I've never worn pants, was all she said.
I could have sworn concern flashed across Cassian's features, but he brushed it aside and drawled,
I have no doubt you'd start a riot if you did.
No reaction. Had the cauldron... Cassian stepped in Nesta's path when she tried to walk past him, put a tan, calloused hand on her forehead. She shook off the touch, but he gripped her wrist, forcing her to meet his stare.
Any one of those human pricks makes a move to hurt you, he breathed, and you kill them.
He wouldn't be coming. No, he'd be mustering the full might of the Illyrian legions. Azriel would be joining us, though. Cassian pressed one of his knives into Nesta's hand.
Ash can kill you now, he said, with lethal quiet as she stared down at the blade. A scratch can make you queasy enough to be vulnerable. Remember where the exits are in every room, every fence, and courtyard. Mark them when you go in, and mark how many men are around you. Mark where Rhys and the others are. Don't forget that you're stronger and faster. Aim for the soft parts, he added, folding her fingers around the hilt. And if someone gets you into a hold...
My sister said nothing as Cassian showed her the sensitive areas on a man. Not just the groin, but the inside of the foot, pinching the thigh, using her elbow like a weapon. When he finished, he stepped back, his hazel eyes churning with some emotion I couldn't place. Nesta surveyed the fine dagger in her hand, then lifted her head to look at him.
I told you to come to training, Cassian said with a cocky grin, and strode off.
I studied Nesta, the dagger, her quiet, still face.
Don't even start, she warned me, and headed for the stairs.
I found Amryn in her apartment, cursing at the book. We're leaving within the hour, I said. Do you have everything you need here?
Yes.
Amryn lifted her head, those up-tilted silver eyes swirling with ire. Not at me, I realized with no small relief, at the fact that Highburn had beaten us to the wall, beaten her. That wasn't my problem. Not as the words of that meeting with the High Lords eddied. Not as I again saw Baron walk out, no soldiers or help promised. Not as I heard Rhys and Cassian discussing how few soldiers the others possessed compared to Hybern's forces. The king's taunt to Rhys had been roiling through my mind for days now. Highburn expected him to give everything, everything, to stop them. Had claimed only that would give us a fighting shot. And I knew my mate, perhaps better than I knew myself. I knew Rhys would spend all of himself, destroy himself if it meant a chance at winning, at survival. The other High Lords. I couldn't afford to risk counting on them. Helion, strong as he was, wouldn't even step in to save his own lover. Tarquin, perhaps, but the others? I didn't know them, didn't have time to, and I would not gamble their tentative allegiance. I would not gamble Rhys.
What do you want?
Amryn snapped when I remained staring at her. There is a creature beneath the library. Do you know it? Amryn shut the book.
Its name is Bryaxis,
What is it?
You do not want to know, girl.
I shoved back the arm of my ebony dress, the finery so at odds with the loft, its messiness. I made a bargain with it. I showed her the band of tattoo around my forearm. So I suppose I do. Amryn stood, brushing dust off her gray pants.
I heard about that.
Foolish girl. I had no choice. And now we are bound to each other.
And what of it?
I want to ask it for another bargain. I need you to examine the wards holding it down there, and to explain things.
I didn't bother to look pleasant, or desperate, or grateful. I didn't bother to wipe the cold, hard mask from my face as I added,
You're coming with me. Right now.
Chapter 50. There was no priestess waiting to lead us into the black pit at the heart of the library, and Amryn for once kept quiet. We reached that bottom level, that impenetrable dark, our steps the only sound. I want to talk to you, I said into the blackness, beckoning beyond the end of the light leaking down from high above.
One does not summon me.
I summon you. I'm here to offer you company, as part of our bargain. Silence. Then I felt it, snaking and curling around us, gobbling up the light. Amryn swore softly.
You brought? What is it you brought?
Someone like you. Or you could be like them.
You speak in riddles.
A cool, insubstantial hand brushed against my nape, and I tried not to inch back toward the light. Bryaxis. Your name is Bryaxis, and someone locked you down here a long time ago. The darkness paused. I'm here to offer you another bargain. Amryn remained still and silent, as I'd told her to, offering me a single nod of confirmation. She could indeed sever the wards holding Bryaxis down here, when the time was right. There is a war, I said, fighting to keep my voice steady. A terrible war, about to break across the land. If I can free you, will you fight for me? For me and my High Lord? The thing, Bryaxis, did not reply. I nudged Amryn with my elbow. She said, her voice as young and old as the creature's. We will offer you freedom from this place in exchange for it. A bargain. A simple, powerful magic. As great as any the book could muster.
This is my home.
I considered. Then what is it you want in exchange? Silence.
Sunlight and moonlight, the stars.
I opened my mouth to say I wasn't entirely sure that even as High Lady of the Night Court I could promise such things, but Amryn stepped on my foot and murmured, A window, high above. Not a mirror, as the carver wanted, but a window in the mountain. We'd have to carve far, far up, but... That's it? Amryn stomped on my foot this time. Bryaxis whispered in my ear,
Will I be able to hunt without restraint on the battlefields? Drink in their fear and dread until I am sated?
I felt slightly bad for Highburn as I said, Yes, only Highburn, and only until the war is over. One way or another. A beat of silence.
What would you have me do, then?
I gestured to Amryn. She will explain. She will disable the wards when we need you.
Then I will wait.
Then it's a bargain. You will obey our orders in this war. Fight for us until we no longer need you, and in exchange, we shall bring the sun and moon
and stars to you, in your home. Another prisoner who had come to love its cell. Perhaps Bryaxis and the Carver should meet. An ancient death god in the face of nightmares. The painting, dreadful yet alluring, began to creep roots deep within my mind. I kept my shoulders loose, posture as casual as I could summon, while the darkness slid around me, winding between me and Amryn, and whispered into my ear, "It is a bargain." I made the hour count. When we all gathered in the townhouse foyer once more to winnow to the Illyrian camp, I changed into my fighting leathers, my new tattoo concealed beneath. No one asked where I'd gone, though Moore looked me over and said, "Where's Amryn?" "Still poring over the book," I answered, just as Rhys winnowed into the townhouse. Not a lie. Amryn would stay here until we needed her at the battlefields. Rhys angled his head.
"Looking for what? The wall is gone."
"For anything," I said. "For another way to nullify the cauldron that doesn't involve the insides of my head leaking out through my nose." Rhys cringed and opened his mouth to object, but I cut him off. "There must be another way. Amryn thinks there must be another way. It doesn't hurt to look, and have her hunt for any other spell that might stop the king." And when Amryn was not doing that, she'd bring down those complex wards containing Bryaxis beneath the library, to be severed only when I called for Bryaxis, only when the might of Hybern's army was fully upon us. If I could not get the Ouroboros for the Carver, then Bryaxis was better than nothing. I wasn't entirely certain why I didn't mention it to the others. Rhys's eyes flickered, no doubt warring with the idea of what role any other route would require of me in regard to the cauldron, but he nodded. I interlaced my fingers with his, and he squeezed once. Behind me, Moore took Nesta and Cassian by the hand, readying to winnow them to the camp, while shadows gathered around Azriel, Elaine at his side, wide-eyed at the spymaster's display. But we hesitated. All of us. And I allowed myself one last time to drink it in, the furniture and the wood and the sunlight, to listen to the sounds of Alaris, the laughing of children in the streets, the song of the gulls. In the silence, I knew my friends were too. Rhys cleared his throat and nodded to Moore. Then he was gone, Cassian and Nesta with her. Then Azriel, gently taking Elaine's hand in his own, as if afraid his scars would hurt her. Alone with Rhys, I savored the buttery sunshine leaking in from the windows of the front door, breathed in the smell of the bread Nuala and Caradwyn had baked that morning with Elaine. "The creature in the library?" I murmured. "Its name is Bryaxis." Rhys lifted a brow.
"Oh?"
"I offered it a bargain, to fight for us." Stars danced in those violet eyes.
"And what did Bryaxis say?"
"Only that it wants a window, to see the stars and moon and sun."
"You did explain that we needed to slaughter our enemies, didn't you?"
I nudged him with a hip. "The library is its home. It only wanted some adjustments made to it." A crooked smile tugged on Rhys's mouth.
"Well, I suppose if I now have to redecorate my own lodgings to match Theseus's splendor, I might as well add a window for the poor thing."
I elbowed him in the ribs that time. He still wore his finery from the meeting. Rhys chuckled.
"So, our army grows by one. Poor Cassian will never recover when he sees his newest recruit."
"With any luck, Hybern won't either."
"And the Carver?"
"He can rot down there. I don't have time for his games. Bryaxis will have to be enough." Rhys glanced at my arm, as if he could see the new second band beside the first one. He lifted our joined hands and pressed a kiss to the back of my palm. Again, we silently looked around the townhouse, taking in every last detail, the quiet that now lay like a layer of dust upon it. Rhys said softly.
I wonder if we'll see it again.
I knew he wasn't just talking about the house, but I rose up on my toes and kissed his cheek. We will, I promised, as a dark wind gathered to sweep us to the Illyrian war camp. I held tightly to him as I added, we'll see it all again. And when that night-kissed wind winnowed us away, away into war, away into untold danger, I prayed that my promise held true. Part 3. High Lady. Chapter 51. Even at the height of summer, the Illyrian mountain camp was damp, brisk. There were some truly lovely days, Rhys assured me when I scowled as we winnowed in, but cooler weather was better anyway, when an army was involved. Heat made tempers rise, especially when it was too hot to sleep comfortably, and considering the Illyrians were a testy lot to begin with, it was a blessing that the sky was cloudy and the wind mist-kissed. But even the weather wasn't enough to make the greeting party look pleasant. I only recognized one of the muscle-bound Illyrians in full armor waiting for us, Lord Devlin. The sneer was still on his face, though milder compared to the outright contempt contorting the features of a few. Like Asriel and Cassian, they possessed dark hair and eyes of assorted hazel and brown, and like my friends, their skin was rich shades of golden brown, some flecked with bone-white scars of varying severity. But unlike my friends, one or two siphons adorned their hands. The seven Asriel and Cassian wore seemed almost vulgar by comparison. But the gathered males only looked at Rhys, as if the two Illyrians flanking him were little more than trees. Mor and I remained on either side of Nesta, who had changed into a dark blue practical dress and now surveyed the camp, the winged warriors, the sheer size of the host assembled in the camp around us. We kept Elaine half hidden behind the wall of our bodies. Considering the backward view of the Illyrians toward females, I'd suggested we remain a step away on this meeting. Literally. There were only a few female fighters in the Legion. Now was not the time to test the tolerance of the Illyrians. Later. Later, if we won this war. If we survived. Devlin was speaking.
It's true, then. The wall came down. A temporary failure,
Rhys crooned. He was still wearing his fine jacket and pants from the meeting with the High Lords. For whatever reason, he hadn't chosen to wear the Illyrian leathers, or the wings.
It's because they already know I trained with them, am one of them. They need to remember that I'm also their High Lord, and I have no intention of loosening the leash.
The words were a silk-covered scrape of nails down my mind. Rhys began giving unwavering, cold instructions about the impending push southward. The voice of the High Lord. The voice of a warrior who had fought in the war and had no intention of losing this one. Cassian frequently added his own orders and clarifications. Asriel just stared them all down. He had not wanted to come to the camp months ago. Disliked being back here. Hated these people. His heritage. The other lords kept glancing to the Shadow Singer in dread and rage and disgust. He only leveled that lethal gaze back at them. On and on they went, until Devlin looked over Rhys's shoulder to where we stood. A scowl at Mor, a frown at me, wisely subdued. Then he noticed Nesta.
What is that?
Devlin asked. Nesta merely stared at him, one hand clamping the edges of her gray cloak together at her chest. One of the other camp lords made some sign against evil.
That, Cassian said too quietly, is none of your concern.
Is she a witch?
I opened my mouth, but Nesta said flatly, Yes.
and I watched as 9 full-grown, weathered Illyrian warlords flinched.
She may act like one sometimes,
Cassian clarified. But no, she is High Fae.
She is no more High Fae than we are, Devlin countered.
A pause that went on for too long. Even Rhys seemed at a loss for words. Devlin had complained when we'd first met that Amarin and I were other, as if he possessed some sense for such things. Devlin muttered,
keep her away from the females and children.
I clutched Nesta's free hand in silent warning to remain quiet. Moore let out a snort that made the Illyrian stiffen, but she shifted, revealing Elaine behind her. Elaine was just blinking, wide-eyed at the camp, the army. Devlin let out a grunt at the sight of her, but Elaine wrapped her own blue cloak around herself, averting her eyes from all of those towering, muscled warriors, the army camp bustling toward the horizon. She was a rose bloom in a mud field, filled with galloping horses. Don't be afraid of them, Nesta said beneath lowered brows. If Elaine was a blooming flower in this army camp, then Nesta. She was a freshly forged sword, waiting to draw blood.
Take them into our war tent,
Rhys said silently to me.
Devlin honestly might throw a hissy fit if he has to face Nesta for another minute.
I'd pay good money to see that.
So would I.
I hid my smile. Let's find something warm to drink, I said to my sisters, beckoning Moore to join. We aimed for the largest of the tents in the camp, a black banner sewn with a mountain and 3 silver stars flapping from its apex. Warriors and females laboring around the fires silently monitored us. Nesta stared them all down. Elaine kept her focus on the dry, rocky ground. The tent's interior was simple yet luxurious. Thick carpets covered the low wooden platform on which the tent had been erected to keep out the damp. Braziers of fey lights flickered throughout. Chairs and a few chaise lounges were scattered around, covered in thick furs. A massive desk, with several chairs, occupied one half of the main space, and behind a curtain in the back, I assume our bed waited. Moore flung herself onto the nearest chaise.
Welcome to the Illyrian war camp, ladies. Try to keep your awe contained.
Nesta drifted toward the desk, the maps atop it. What is the difference, she asked, none of us in particular, between a fairy and a witch?
Witches amass power beyond their natural reserve, Moore answered with sudden seriousness. They use spells and archaic tools to harness more power to them than the cauldron allotted, and use it for whatever they desire, good or ill.
Elaine silently surveyed the tent, head tipping back. Her mass of heavy brown gold hair shifted with the movement, the fey light dancing among the silken strands. She'd left it half up, the style arranged to hide her ears, should the glamours fail at Grayson's estate. Tamlin's hadn't worked on Nesta. Perhaps Grayson and his father would have a similar immunity to such things. Elaine at last slid into the chair near Moore's, her dawn pink dress, finer than the ones she usually wore, crinkling beneath her.
Will many of the soldiers die?
I cringed, but Nesta said,
yes.
I could almost see the unspoken words Nesta reined in. Your mate might die sooner than them, though. Moore said,
whenever you're ready, Elaine, I'll glamour you.
Will it hurt? Elaine asked.
It didn't when Tamlin glamoured your memories, Nesta said, leaning against the desk.
Moore still said,
no, it might tingle. Just act as you would as a human.
It's the same as how I act now, Elaine began, wringing her slender fingers.
Yes, I said, but try to keep the vision talk to yourself.
while we're there. I added quickly, unless it's something that you can't.
I can, Elaine said, squaring her slim shoulders. I will.
Moore smiled tightly.
Deep breath.
Elaine obeyed. I blinked, and it was done. Gone was the faint glow of immortal health, the face that had become a bit sharper. Gone were the pointed ears, the grace. Muted. Drab. Or, in the way that someone as beautiful as Elaine could be drab, even her hair seemed to have lost its luster. The gold now brassy, the brown mousy. Elaine studied her hands, turning them over.
I hadn't realized how ordinary it looked.
You're still lovely, Moore said a bit gently. Elaine offered a half smile.
I suppose that war makes wanting things like that unimportant.
Moore was quiet for a heartbeat.
Perhaps, but you should not let war steal it from you regardless.
Elaine's palm was clammy in mine as Rhys winnowed us into the human lands, Moore taking Asriel and Nesta. And though her face was calm when we found ourselves blinking at the heat and sunshine of a full mortal summer, her grip on my hand was as strong as the iron ring around her finger. The heat lay heavy over the estate we now faced, the stone guardhouse the only opening I could see in either direction. The only opening in the towering stone wall rising up before us, solid as some mammoth beast, so high I had to crane my neck back to spy the spikes jutting from its top. The guards at the thick iron gates. Rhys slid his hands into his pockets, a shield already around us. Moore and Asriel took up defensive positions at our sides. 12 guards at this gate, all armed, faces hidden beneath thick helmets despite the heat. Their bodies were equally covered in plated armor, right down to their boots. Any of us could end their lives without lifting a hand, and the wall they guarded, the gates they held, I didn't think they would last long either. But if we could place wards here, perhaps set up a bastion of Fey warriors. Through those open gates, I glimpsed sprawling lands, fields and pastures and groves, and a lake. And beyond it, a solid, bulky fortress of dark brown stone. Nesta had been right. It was like a prison, this place. Its lord had prepared to weather the storm from inside, a king over these resources. But there was room, plenty of room for people. And the would-be mistress of this prison. Head high, Elaine said to the guards, to the dozen arrows now pointed at her slender throat, "Tell Grayson that his betrothed has come for him. Tell him that Elaine Archeron begs for sanctuary." Chapter 52. We waited outside the gates while a guard mounted a horse and galloped down the long, dusty road to the fortress itself. A second curtain wall lay around the bulky building. With our face sight, we could see as those gates opened, then another pair. "How did you even meet him?" I murmured to Elaine as we lingered beneath the shade of the looming oaks outside the gate. "If he's locked up in here..." Elaine stared and stared at the distant fortress. "At a ball. His father's ball."
"I've been to funerals that were merrier," Nesta muttered. Elaine cut her a look.
"This house has needed a woman's touch for years." Neither of us said that it didn't seem likely she would be the one. Asriel kept a few steps away, little more than the shade of one of the oaks behind us. But Moore and Rhys, they monitored everything. The guards whose fear, the salty, sweaty tang of it grated on every nerve. But they held firm, held those ash-tipped arrows at us. Long minutes passed. Then, finally,
A yellow flag was raised at the distant fortress gates. We braced ourselves, but one of the guards before us grunted,
"He'll come out to see you."
We were not to be allowed within the keep, to see their defenses, their resources. The guardhouse was as far as they'd allow us. They led us inside, and though we tried to keep our otherness to a minimum, the hounds leashed to the walls within snarled, viciously enough that the guards let them out. The main room of the guardhouse was stuffy and cramped, more so with all of us in there, and though I offered Elaine a seat by the sealed window, she remained standing, at the front of our company, staring at the shut iron door. I knew Rhys was listening to every word the guards uttered outside, his tendrils of power waiting to sense any turn in their intentions. I doubted the stone and iron of the building could hold any of us, certainly not together, but letting them shut us in here to wait. It rubbed against some nerve, made my body restless, a cold sweat breaking out. Too small. Not enough air.
"It's all right," Rhys soothed. "This place cannot hold you."
I nodded, though he hadn't spoken, trying to swallow the feeling of the walls and ceiling pushing on me. Nesta was watching me carefully. I admitted to her, "Sometimes I have problems with small spaces." Nesta studied me for a long moment, and then she said with equal quiet, though we could all hear, "I can't get into the bathtub anymore. I have to use buckets." I hadn't known. Hadn't even thought that bathing, submerging in water. I knew better than to touch her hand, but I said, "When we get home, we'll install something else for you." I could have sworn there was gratitude in her eyes, that she might have said something else when horses approached.
2 dozen guards, Asriel murmured to Rhys, a glance at Elaine, and Lord Grayson and his father, Lord Nolan.
Elaine went still as a doe as footsteps crunched outside. I caught Nesta's eye, read the understanding there, and nodded. Any attempt to hurt Elaine, I didn't care what I had promised my sister, I'd leave Nesta to shred him. Indeed, my eldest sister's fingers had curled, as if invisible talons crowned them. But the door banged open, and the panting young man was so human-looking. Handsome, brown-haired, blue-eyed, but human. Solidly built beneath his light armor. Tall, perhaps a mortal ideal of a knight who would swoop a beautiful maiden onto his horse and ride off into the sunset. So at odds from the savage strength of the Illyrians, the cultivated lethalness of Mor and Amryn, from my own clawing and shredding, and Nesta's. But a small sound came out of Elaine as she beheld Grayson, as he gasped for breath, scanning her from head to toe. He staggered toward her a step. A broad, scar-flecked hand gripped the back of Grayson's armor, hauling him to a stop. The man who had held the young lord fully entered the cramped room. Tall and thin, hawk-nosed and gray-eyed.
"What is the meaning of this?"
We all stared at him beneath lowered brows. Elaine was shaking. "Sir, Lord Nolan..." Words failed her as she again looked at her betrothed, who had not taken his earnest blue eyes from her, not for a heartbeat. "The wall has come down," Nesta said, stepping to Elaine's side. Grayson looked to Nesta at that. Shock flared at what he beheld. The ears, the beauty, the otherworldly power that thrummed around her.
"How?"
he said, his voice low and raspy. "I was kidnapped," Nesta answered coolly, not one flicker of fear in her eyes. "I was taken by the army invading these lands and turned against my will."
"How?"
Nolan echoed. There is a cauldron, a weapon. It grants its owner power to do such things. I was a test. Nesta then launched into a sharp, short explanation of the Queen's, of Highburn, of why the wall had fallen. When she finished, Lord Nolan only demanded,
"And who are your companions?"
It was a gamble. We knew it was. To say who we were, when we knew full well the terror of any Fae, let alone High Lords. But I stepped forward.
My name is Feyre Archeron. I am High Lady of the Night Court. This is Rhysand, my husband.
I doubted mate would go over well as a term. Rhys came to my side. Some of the guards shifted and murmured with terror. Some flinched at the hand Rhys lifted, to gesture behind him.
Our third in command, Morrigan, and our spymaster Azrael.
Lord Nolan, to his credit, didn't blanch.
Grayson did, but remained steady.
Elaine, Grayson breathed.
Elaine, why are you with them?
Because she is our sister, Nesta answered, her fingers still curled with those invisible talons. And there is no safer place for her during this war than with us.
Elaine whispered, Grayson, we've come to beg you.
A pleading glance at his father. Both of you, open your gates to any humans who can get here, to families. With the wall down, they believe there is not enough time for an evacuation. The Queens will not send aid from the continent, but here, they might stand a chance.
Neither man responded, though Grayson now looked at Elaine's engagement ring. His blue eyes rippled with pain.
I would be inclined to believe you, he said quietly, if you were not lying to me with your every breath.
Elaine blinked. I am not, I...
Did you think?
Lord Nolan said, and Nesta and I closed ranks around Elaine as he took a step toward us.
That you could come to my house and deceive me with your fairy magic?
Rhys said, We don't care what you believe. We only came to ask you to help those who cannot defend themselves.
At what gain? What risk of your own?
You have an arsenal of ash weapons, I said. I'd think the risk to us is apparent.
And to your sister as well,
Nolan spat toward Elaine.
Don't forget to include her.
Any weapon can hurt a mortal, Moore said blandly.
But she isn't a mortal, is she?
Nolan sneered.
No. I have it on good authority that it was Elaine Archeron who was turned Fae first, and who now has a High Lord's son as a mate.
And who exactly told you this?
Rhys said with a lift of the brow, not showing 1 ounce of ire, of surprise. Steps sounded. But we all went for our weapons as Jurian strolled into the guardhouse and said,
I did.
Chapter 53 Jurian held up his tanned hands, new calluses dotting his palms and fingers. New, for the remade body he'd had to train to handle weapons these months.
I came alone, Jurian said. You can stop snarling.
Elaine began shaking, either at the truth revealed or the memories that pelted her, pelted Nesta at the sight of him. Jurian inclined his head to my sisters.
Ladies? They are no ladies,
Lord Nolan sneered. Father, Grayson mourned. Nolan ignored him.
Upon his arrival, Jurian explained what had been done to you, both of you, what the queens on the continent desire.
And what is that?
Rhys asked, his voice a deceptive croon.
Power, youth,
Jurian said with a shrug.
The usual things.
Why are you here? I demanded.
Kill him. We should kill him now, before he could hurt us any further. Kill him for that bolt he'd put through Asriel's chest, and the threat he'd made to Miriam and Draken, perhaps causing them to vanish and leave us to fight this war on our own.
The queens are snakes,
Jurian said, leaning against the edge of a table shoved by the wall.
They deserve to be butchered for their treachery. It took no effort on my part when Highburn sent me to woo them to our cause. Only one of them was noble enough to play the game, to know we'd been dealt a shitty hand, and to play it the best she could. But when she helped you, the others found out, and they gave her to the Adder.
Jurian's eyes gleamed bright. Not with madness, I realized, but clarity. And I had the sense of the world sliding out from beneath my feet as Jurian said,
He resurrected me to turn them to his cause, believing I had gone mad during the 500 years Amarantha trapped me. So I was reborn, and found myself surrounded by my old enemies, faces I had once marked to kill. I found myself on the wrong side of a wall, with the human realm poised to shatter beneath it.
Jurian looked right to Mor, whose mouth was a tight line.
You were my friend, he said, voice straining. We fought back to back during some battles. And yet you believed me at first sight, believed that I'd ever let them turn me.
You went mad with Clithia. It was madness. It destroyed you.
And I was glad to do it. Jurian snarled. I was glad to do it, if it bought us an edge in that war. I didn't care what it did to me, what it broke in me, if it meant we could be free. And I have had 500 years to think about it, while being held prisoner by my enemy. 500 years more.
The way he said her name, so familiar and knowing.
You played the villain convincingly enough, Jurian.
Rhys purred. Jurian snapped his face toward Rhys.
You should have looked. I expected you to look into my mind to see the truth. Why didn't you?
Rhys was quiet for a long moment. Then he said softly,
Because I didn't want to see her.
See any trace of Amarantha?
You mean to imply, Mor pushed, that you've been working to help us during this?
Where better to plot your enemies' demise, to learn their weaknesses, than at their side?
We were silent, Lord Grayson and his father watching. Or the latter did. Grayson and Elaine were just staring at each other.
Why this obsession to find Miriam and Draken? Mor asked.
It's what the world expects of me. What Highburn expects. And if he grants my asking price to find them. Draken has a legion capable of turning the tide in battle. It was why I allied with him during the war. I don't doubt Draken still has it trained and ready. Word will have reached him by now, especially that I'm looking for them.
A warning. The only way Jurian could send one, by making himself the hunter. I said to Jurian, You don't want to kill Miriam and Draken. There was stark honesty in Jurian's eyes as he shook his head once.
No,
he said roughly.
I want to beg their forgiveness.
I looked to Mor. The tears lined her eyes, and she blinked them furiously away.
Miriam and Draken have vanished,
Rhys said.
There are people with them.
Then find them,
Jurian said. He jerked his chin to Asriel.
Send the Shadow Singer. Send whomever you trust, but find them.
Silence.
Look into my head,
Jurian said to Rhys.
Look, and see for yourself.
Why now?
Rhys said.
Why here?
Jurian held his stare.
Because the wall came down, and now I can move freely, to warn the humans here.
Because...
He loosed a long breath.
Because Tamlin ran right back to Highburn after your meeting ended this morning. Right to their camp in the Spring Court, where Highburn now plans to launch a land assault on Summer tomorrow.
Chapter 54. Jurian was not my enemy. I couldn't wrap my mind around it, even as Rhys and I both looked. I didn't linger for long. The pain and guilt and rage, what he had seen and endured. But Jurian spoke true, laid himself bare to us. He knew the spot they planned to attack, where and when and how many. Azriel vanished without a glance at any of us, to warn Cassian and move the Legion. Jurian was saying to Mor,
"They didn't kill the Sixth Queen. Vasa. She saw through me, or thought she did, from the start. Warned them against us, told them that if I was reborn, it was a bad sign, and to rally their armies to face the threat before it grew too large. But Vasa's too brash, too young. She didn't play the game the way the Golden One, Demetra, did. Didn't see the lust in their eyes when I told them of the Cauldron's powers. Didn't know that from the moment I began to spin Highburn's lies, they became her enemies. They couldn't kill Vasa. The next in line to her throne is far more willful. So they found an old Death Lord above the wall, with a penchant for enslaving young women. He cursed her and stole her away. The entire world believes she's been sick these past months.
We know, Mor said, and none of us dared glance at Elaine. We learned about it.
And even with the truth laid bare, none of us told him that Lucien had gone after her. Elaine seemed to remember, though, who was hunting for that missing queen. And she said to Grayson, stone-faced and sorrowful through all of this,
I did not mean to deceive you.
His father answered, I find I have trouble believing that.
Grayson swallowed.
Did you think you could come back here? Live with me as this lie?
No. Yes, I don't know what I wanted.
And you are bound to some fey male? A High Lord's son?
A different High Lord's heir, likely, I wanted to say.
His name is Lucien.
I wasn't certain if I'd ever heard his name from her lips.
I don't care what his name is.
The first sharp words from Grayson.
You are his mate. Do you even know what that means?
It means nothing, Elaine said, her voice breaking. It means nothing. I don't care who decided it or why they did.
You belong to him.
I belong to no one, but my heart belongs to you.
Grayson's face hardened.
I don't want it.
He would have been better off hitting her. That's how deep the hurt in her eyes went. And seeing her face crumple. I stepped close, pushing her behind me.
Here is what's going to happen. You are going to take in any people who can make it here. We will supply these walls with wards.
We don't need them,
sneered Nolan.
Shall I demonstrate for you, I said, how wrong you are? Or shall you take my word for it that I could reduce this wall to rubble with half a thought? And that is to say nothing of my friends. You will find, Lord Nolan, that you want our wards. And our help. All in exchange for taking in whatever humans need the safety.
I don't want riffraff wandering through here.
So, only the rich and chosen will walk through these gates?
Rhys asked, arching a brow.
I can't imagine the aristocracy being content to work your land and fish in your lake, or butcher your meat.
We have plenty of workers here to do that.
It was happening again. Another fight with narrow-minded, hateful people. But Jurian said to the lords,
I fought beside your ancestor, and he would be ashamed if you locked out those who needed it. You would spit on his grave to do so. I hold a position of trust with Highburn. One word from me, and I will make sure his legion takes a visit here. To you.
You'll threaten to bring the very enemy you seek to protect us from?
Jurian shrugged.
I can also convince Highburn to steer clear.
He trusts me that much.
You let in those people. I will do my best to keep his armies far away.
He gave Rhys a look, daring him to doubt it.
We were still too stunned to even try to look neutral.
But then Nolan said,
I don't pretend to have a large army, only a considerable unit of soldiers. If what you say is true.
A glance at Grayson.
We will take them. Whoever can make it.
I wondered if the Elder Lord might be the one who could actually be reasoned with. Especially as Grayson said to Elaine,
take that ring off.
Elaine's fingers curved into a fist. No. Ugly. This was about to get ugly in the worst way.
Take it off.
It was Nolan's turn to murmur a warning to his son. Grayson ignored him. Elaine did not move.
Take it off!
The roared words barked over the stones.
That's enough,
Rhys said, his voice lethally calm.
The lady keeps the ring if she wants it.
Though none of us will be particularly sad to see it go.
Females tend to prefer gold, or silver, to iron. Grayson leveled a seething look at Rhysand.
Is this the start of it? You fey males will come to take our women? Are your own not fuckable enough?
Watch your tongue, boy,
his father said. Elaine turned white at the coarse language. Grayson only said to her,
I'm not marrying you. Our engagement is over. I will take whatever people occupy your lands, but not you. Never you.
Tears began sliding down Elaine's face, their scent filling the room with salt. Nesta stepped forward, then another step, then another, until she was in front of Grayson faster than anyone could see, until Nesta smacked him hard enough that his head snapped to the side.
You never deserved her.
Nesta snarled into the stunned silence as Grayson cupped his face and swore, bending over. Nesta only looked back at me. Rage, unfiltered and burning, roiled in her eyes. But her voice was stone cold as she said to me,
I assume we're done here?
I gave her a wordless nod. And proud as any queen, Nesta took Elaine's arm and led her from the guardhouse. More trailed behind, guarding their backs as they entered the veritable field of weapons and snarling hounds waiting outside. The two lords saw themselves out, without so much as a goodbye. Alone, Jurian said,
Tell the Shadow Singer I'm sorry, about the arrow to the chest.
Rhys shook his head.
What's the next move, then? I assume you're doing more than warning humans to flee or hide.
Jurian pushed off the table.
The next move, Rhysand, is me going back to that Highburn war camp and throwing a fit that my search for Miriam and Draken's whereabouts wasn't fruitful. My step after that is to take another trip to the continent and sow the seeds of discord amongst the Queen's courts. To let some vital things slip about their agenda, who they really support, what they really want. It will keep them busy,
too worried about their own internal conflict to consider sailing here. And once that's done, who knows? Perhaps I'll join you on the battlefield.
Rhys rubbed his brows with a thumb and forefinger, the locks of his hair sliding forward as he dipped his head.
I wouldn't believe a word, except I looked into that head of yours.
Geryon tapped a hand on the doorframe.
Tell Cassian to hammer the left flank hard tomorrow. Ibern is putting his untrained nobles there for some seasoning. They're spoiled and untested. Buckle the ranks there and it'll spook the grunts. Hit them with everything you've got, and fast. Don't give them time to rally or find their courage.
Geryon gave me a grim smile.
I never congratulated you for slaughtering Dagdin and Branna. Good riddance.
I did it for those children of the Blessed, I said. Not for glory.
I know,
Geryon said, flicking up his brows.
Why do you think I decided to trust you?
Chapter 55.
I'm too old for these sort of surprises.
Moore groused as the war tent groaned in the howling mountain wind at the northern border of the Winter Court, the Illyrian army settling down for the night. To wait for the attack tomorrow. They'd flown all day, the location remote enough to keep even an army of our size hidden. Until tomorrow, at least. We'd warned Tarquin and dispatched messages to Helion and Calias to join if they could make it in time. But come the hour before dawn, the Illyrian Legion would take to the skies and fly hard for that southern battlefield. They would land, hopefully, before it began, right as Kyr and his commanders winnowed in the Darkbringer Legion from the Night Court. And then, the slaughter would begin. On either side. If what Geryon claimed was true. Cassian had choked when we'd told him Geryon's battle advice. A milder reaction, Asriel said, than his initial response. I asked Moore from where I sat at the foot of the fur-covered chaise we currently shared. You never suspected Geryon might be good. She swigged from her wine and leaned back against the cushions piled before the rolled headdress. My sisters were in another tent, not quite as big but equally luxurious, their lodgings flanked by Cassian's and Asriel's tents, and Moore's before it. No one would get them out without my friends knowing, even if Moore was currently here with me.
I don't know, she said, hauling a heavy wool throw blanket over her legs. I was never as close to Geryon as I was to some of the others, but we did fight together, saved each other. I just assumed Amarantha broke him. Parts of him are broken, I said, shuddering to recall those memories I'd seen, the feelings. I pulled some of her blanket over my lap. We're all broken, Moore said. In our own ways, in places no one might see. I angled my head to inquire, but she asked, Is Elaine all right? No, was all I said. Elaine was not all right. She had quietly cried while we winnowed here, and in the hours afterward, while the army arrived and the camp was rebuilt. She didn't take off her ring. She only lay on the cot in her tent, nestled among the furs and blankets, and stared at nothing. Any bit of good, any advancement, gone. I debated returning to smash every bone in Grayson's body, but resisted, if only because it would give Nesta license to unleash herself upon him. And death at Nesta's hands? I wondered if they'd have to invent a new word for killing when she was done with Grayson. So Elaine silently cried, the tears so unending that I wondered if it was some sign of her heart bleeding out. Some sliver of hope that had shattered today. That Grayson would still love her, still marry her, and that love would trump even a mating bond. A final tether had been snapped.
to her life in the human lands. Only our father, wherever he was, remained as any sort of connection. Moore read whatever was on my face and set down the wine on the small wood table beside the chaise.
We should sleep. I don't even know why I'm drinking.
Today was unexpected.
It's so much harder,
she said, groaning as she chucked the rest of the blanket into my lap and rose to her feet.
When enemies turn into friends.
And the opposite, I suppose.
What didn't I see? What did I overlook or dismiss? It always makes me reassess myself more than them.
Another joy of war? She snorted, heading for the tent flaps.
No, of life.
I barely slept that night. Reese didn't come to the tent, not once. I slipped from our bed when the darkness was just starting to yield to gray, following the tug of the mating bond as I had done that day under the mountain. He stood atop a rocky outcropping, crusted with patches of ice, watching the stars fade away one by one over the still slumbering camp. I wordlessly slid my arm around his waist, and he shifted his wings to fold me into his side.
A lot of soldiers are going to die today, he said quietly.
I know.
It never gets easier, he whispered.
The strong pains of his face were taut, and silver lined his eyes as he studied the stars. Only here, only now would he show that grief, that worry and pain. Never before his armies, never before his enemies. He loosed a long breath.
Are you ready?
I would stay near the back of the lines with Moore to get a feel for battle, the flow and terror and structure. My sisters would remain here until it was safe to winnow them afterward, if things didn't go to hell first.
No,
I admitted, but I have no other choice than to be ready. Reese kissed the top of my head, and we stared at the dying stars in silence.
I'm grateful, he said after a while, as the camp beneath us stirred in the building light. To have you at my side? I don't know if I ever told you that. How grateful I am to have you stand with me.
I blinked back the burning in my eyes and took his hand. I laid it over my heart, letting him feel its beating while I kissed him one final time, the last of the stars vanishing as the army below us awoke to do battle. Chapter 56. Jurian was right. We'd seen inside his head, yet we'd still doubted, still wondered if we'd arrived to find Highburn had changed their position or attacked elsewhere. But Highburn's horde was precisely where Jurian claimed they'd be. And as the Illyrian army swept for them while they marched over the spring border and into summer, Highburn's forces certainly seemed shocked. Reese had cloaked our forces, all of them. Sweat had slid down his temple at the strain, at keeping the mass of us hidden from sight and sound and scent as we flew mile after mile. My wings weren't strong enough, so Moore winnowed us through the sky, keeping pace with them. But we arrived together, and as Reese ripped the sight shield away, revealing battle-hungry Illyrians spearing from the skies in neat, precise lines, as he revealed the legion of Kyr's Darkbringers charging on foot, swathed in wisps of night and armed with star-bright steel, it was hard not to be smug at the panic that rippled over that marching mass of Highburn. But Highburn's army, it stretched far, deep and long, meant to sweep away everything in its path.
Shields,
Cassian bellowed at the front line. One by one by one, shields of red and blue and green flickered into life around the Illyrians and their weapons, overlapping like the scales of a fish,
overlapping like the solid metal shields they each bore on their left arms, locking into place from ankle to shoulder. Below, Kyr's troops rippled with shadowy shields flaring into place before them. Moore winnowed us to the tree-covered hill that overlooked the field Cassian had deemed would be the best place to hit them based on Azriel's scouting. There was a slope to the grass, and our advantage. We held the high ground. A narrow, shallow river lay not too far back from Hybern's army. Success in battle, Cassian had told me that morning over a swift breakfast, was often decided not by numbers, but by picking where to fight. The Hybern army seemed to realize their disadvantage within moments. But the Illyrians had landed beside Kyr's soldiers. Cassian, Azriel, and Rhys spread out amongst the front line, all clad in that black Illyrian armor, all armed as the other winged soldiers were. Shield gripped in the left hand, Illyrian blade in the right, an assortment of daggers on them, and helmets. The helmets were the only markers of who they were. Unlike the smooth domes of the others, Rhys, Azriel, and Cassian wore black helmets whose cheek guards had been fashioned and swept upward like raven's wings. Albeit razor-sharp raven's wings that jutted up on either side of the helmet right above the ear, but the effect, I admitted, was terrifying, especially with the two other swords strapped across their backs, the gauntlets that covered every inch of their hands, and the siphons gleaming amongst Cassian and Azriel's ebony armor. Rhys's own power roiled around him, readying to hammer the right flank while Cassian aimed for the left. Rhys was to conserve his power, in case the king arrived. Or worse, the cauldron. This army, however huge, it did not seem that the king was even there to lead it. Or Tamlin. Or Jurian. Merely an invading harbinger of the force to come, but sizable enough that the damage... We could easily spy the damage behind the army, the plumes of smoke staining the cloudless summer sky. Moore and I said little in the hours that followed. I didn't have it in me for words, for any sort of coherent speech as we watched. Either through our surprise or pure luck, there was no sign of that Feybane. I was inclined to thank the mother for that. Even if every soldier in our camp this morning had mixed Nuan's antidote into their gruel, it would do nothing against blocking weapons tipped in Feybane from shattering shields, only stop against the stifling of magic, should it come into contact either through that damned powder or by being impaled by a weapon tipped in it. Lucky. So lucky it was not in use today. Because seeing the carnage, the fine line of control, there was no place for me on those front lines, where the Illyrians fought by the strength of their sword, their power, and their trust in the mail on either side of them. Even Kyr's soldiers fought as one, obedient and unfaltering, lashing out with shadows and steel. I would have been a fissure in that impenetrable armor, and what Cassian and the Illyrians unleashed upon Hybern... Cassian slammed into that left flank. Siphons unleashed, bursts of power that sometimes bounced off shields, sometimes found their mark and shredded flesh and bone. But where Hybern's magic shields held out, Rhys, Azriel, and Cassian sent out blasts of their own power to shatter them, leaving them vulnerable to those siphons, or pure Illyrian steel. And if that did not fell them, Kyr and his Darkbringers cleaned up the rest. Precisely. Coolly. The field became a blood-drenched mud pit. Bodies gleamed in the morning sun, light bouncing off their armor. Hybern panicked at the unbreakable Illyrian lines that pushed and pushed them back, that battered them. And as that left flank broke apart, as its nobles fell or turned and fled, the other Hybern soldiers began descending into panic too. There was one mounted commander who did not go easily, who didn't turn his horse toward that river behind them to flee. Cassian selected him as his opponent.
Moore gripped my hand tight enough to hurt as Cassian stepped out of that impenetrable front line of shields and swords, the soldiers around him immediately closing the gap. Mud and blood splattered Cassian's dark helmet, his armor. He ditched his tall shield for a round one, strapped across his back, crafted from the same ebony metal, and then he launched into a run. I could have sworn even Rhys paused on the other end of the battlefield to watch as Cassian cut his way through those enemy soldiers aiming for the mounted Highburn commander, who realized what and who was coming for him and started to search for a better weapon. Cassian had been born for this. These fields, this chaos and brutality and calculation. He didn't stop moving. Seemed to know where every opponent fought both ahead and behind. Seemed to breathe in the flow of the battle around him. He even let his siphon's shield drop to get close, to feel the impact of the arrows that he took in that ebony shield. If he slammed that shield into a soldier, his other arm was already swinging his sword at the next opponent. I'd never seen anything like it. The skill and precision. It was like a dance. I must have said it aloud because Moore replied, "For him, that's what battle is. A symphony." Her eyes did not stray from Cassian's death dance. Three soldiers were brave or stupid enough to try to charge him. Cassian had them down and dying with four maneuvers. "Holy mother," I breathed. That was who had been training me. Why Fae trembled at his name. Why the high-born Illyrian warriors had been jealous enough to want him dead. But there Cassian was. No one between him and the commander. The commander had found a discarded spear. He threw it. Fast and sure. I skipped a heartbeat as it spiraled for Cassian. His knees bent, wings tucked in tight, shield twisting. He took the spear in the shield with an impact I could have sworn I heard, then sliced off the shaft and kept running. Within a heartbeat, Cassian had sheathed both shield and sword across his back, and I would have asked why, but he'd already picked up another fallen spear. Already hurled it, his entire body going into the throw, the movement so perfect that I knew I'd one day paint it. Both armies seemed to stop at the throw. Even with the distance, Cassian's spear hit home. It went right through the commander's chest, so hard it knocked the male clean off his horse. By the time he was done falling, Cassian was there. His sword caught the sunlight as it lifted and plunged down. Cassian had picked his mark well. Highburn fled now. Outright turned and fled for the river. But Highburn found Tarquin's army waiting on its opposite bank, exactly where Cassian had ordered it to appear. Trapped, with the Illyrians and Kyr's Darkbringers at their backs, and Tarquin's 2,000 soldiers on the other side of the narrow river. It was harder to watch, that slaughter. Moore said to me, "It's over." The sun was high in the sky, heat rising with every minute. "You don't need to see this," she added, because some of Highburn's soldiers were surrendering, on their knees. As it was Tarquin's territory, Rhys yielded the decision about what to do with prisoners. From the distance, I picked out Tarquin from his armor, more ornate than Rhysand's, but still brutal. Fish fins and scales seemed to be the motif, and his azure cloak flowed through the mud behind him as he stepped over fallen bodies to get to the few hundred surviving enemy. Tarquin stared at where the enemy had knelt, his helmet masking his features. Nearby, Rhys, Cassian, and Asriel monitored, speaking to Kyr and the Illyrian captains. I didn't see many wings amongst the fallen on the field. A mercy. The only mercy, it seemed, as Tarquin made a motion with his hand. Some of the Highburn soldiers began screaming for clemency.
Their offers to sell information ringing out, even to us. Tarquin pointed at a few of them, and they were hauled away by his soldiers, to be questioned. And I doubted it would be pleasant. But the others. Tarquin stretched out his hand toward them. It took me a heartbeat to realize why the Highburn soldiers were thrashing and clawing at themselves, some trying to crawl away. But then one of them collapsed, and sunlight caught on his face, and even with the distance, I could tell. It was water now bubbling out of his lips. Out of the lips of all the Highburn soldiers, as Tarquin drowned them on dry land. I didn't see Rhys or the others for hours. Not when he gave the order that the Illyrian war camp was to be moved from the border of the Winter Court and rebuilt at the edge of the battlefield. So Mor and I winnowed to and from the camps as the exodus began. We brought my sisters last, waiting until many of the bodies had been turned to black dust by Rhysand. The blood and mud remained, but the camp maintained too good a position to yield, or waste time finding another one. Elaine didn't seem to care. Didn't seem to even notice that we winnowed her. She just went from her tent to Moore's arms, then into the same tent, rebuilt in the new camp. Nesta, however. I told her upon arriving that everyone was fine, but when we winnowed to the battlefield, she stared at that bloody, muddy plain, at the weapons soldiers of both courts were plundering from the fallen enemy. Nesta listened to the low-level Illyrian soldiers whispering about how Cassian had thrown that spear, how he'd cut down soldiers like stalks of wheat, how he'd fought like Analius, their most ancient warrior god and the first of the Illyrians. It had been a while, it seemed, since they had seen Cassian in open battle, since they'd realized that he'd been young in the war, and now? The looks they gave Cassian as he passed. They were the same as those the High Lords had given Rhys upon seeing his power. Like them, and yet, other. Nesta watched, and listened to it all, while the camp was built around us. She didn't ask where the bodies had gone before her arrival. She wholly ignored the camp Kyr and his Darkbringers built beside ours, the ebony-armored soldiers who sneered at her, at me, at the Illyrians. No. Nesta only made sure that Elaine was dozing in her tent, and then offered to help cut up linen for bandages. We were doing just that, around the early evening fire, when Rhys and Cassian approached, still in their armor, Azriel nowhere to be found. Rhys took a seat on the log I was perched atop of, armor thudding, and silently pressed a kiss to my temple. He reeked of metal and blood and sweat. His helmet clunked on the ground at our feet. I silently handed him a pitcher of water, and made to grab a glass when Rhys just lifted the pewter container and drank right from it. It sloshed over the sides, water pinging against the black metal coating his thighs, and when he at last set it down, he looked tired. In his eyes, Rhys seemed weary. But Nesta had jolted to her feet, staring at Cassian, at the helmet he had tucked into the crook of his arm, the weapons still poking above his shoulder, in need of cleaning. His dark hair hung limp with sweat. His face was mud-splattered where even the helmet had not kept it out. But she surveyed his seven siphons, the dim red stones, and then said, "You're hurt." Rhys snapped to attention at that. Cassian's face was grim, his eyes glassy.
"It's fine."
Even the words were laced with exhaustion, but she reached for his arm, his shield arm. Cassian seemed to hesitate, but offered it to her, tapping the siphon atop his palm. The armor slid back a fraction over his forearm, revealing,
"You know better than to walk around with an injury," Rhys said a bit tensely. "I was busy," Cassian said, not taking his focus off Nesta as she studied the swollen wrist.
How she detected it through the armor.
She must have read it in his eyes. His stance. I hadn't realized she'd been observing the Illyrian general enough to notice his tells.
And it'll be fixed by morning,
Cassian said, daring Rhys to say otherwise. But Nesta's pale fingers gently probed his golden brown skin, and he hissed through his teeth. How do I fix it? She asked. Her hair had been tied in a loose knot atop her head earlier in the day, and in the hours that we'd worked to ready and distribute supplies to the healers, through the heat and humidity, stray tendrils had come free to curl about her temple, her nape. Faint color had stained her cheeks from the sun, and her forearms, bare beneath the sleeves she'd rolled up, were flecked with mud. Cassian slowly sat on the log where she'd been perched a moment before, groaning softly, as if even that movement taxed him.
Icing it usually helps, but wrapping it will just lock it in place long enough for the sprain to repair itself.
She reached for the basket of bandages she'd been preparing, then for the pitcher at her feet. I was too tired to do anything other than watch, as she washed his wrist, his hand, her own fingers gentle. Too tired to ask if she possessed the magic to heal it herself. Cassian seemed too weary to speak as well, while she wrapped bandages around his wrist, only grunting to confirm if it was too tight or too loose, if it helped at all. But he watched her. Didn't take his eyes off her face, the brows bunched and lips pursed in concentration. And when she'd tied it neatly, his wrist wrapped in white, when Nesta made to pull back, Cassian gripped her fingers in his good hand. She lifted her gaze to his.
Thank you,
he said hoarsely. Nesta did not yank her hand away, did not open her mouth for some barbed retort. She only stared and stared at him, at the breadth of his shoulders, even more powerful in that beautiful black armor, at the strong column of his tan neck above it, his wings, and then at his hazel eyes, still riveted to her face. Cassian brushed a thumb down the back of her hand. Nesta opened her mouth at last, and I braced myself.
You're hurt?
At the sound of Moore's voice, Cassian snatched his hand back and pivoted toward Moore with a lazy smile.
Nothing for you to cry over. Don't worry.
Nesta dragged her stare from his face, down to her now empty hand, her fingers still curled, as if his palm lay there. Cassian didn't look at Nesta as she rose, snatching up the pitcher and muttering something about getting more water from inside the tent. Cassian and Moore fell into their banter, laughing and taunting each other about the battle and the ones ahead. Nesta didn't come back out again for some time. I helped with the wounded long into the night, Moore and Nesta working alongside me. A long day for all of us, yes, but the others. They had fought for hours. From the tight angle of Moore's jaw as she tended to injured Darkbringers and Illyrians alike, I knew the various recountings of the battle wore on her. Not for the tales of glory and gore, but for the sole fact that she hadn't been there to fight beside them. But between the Darkbringer forces and the Illyrians, I wondered where she'd fight, whom she'd command or answer to. Definitely not Kyr, but I was still chewing it over when I at last slipped between the warm sheets of my bed and curled my body into Rhys's. His arm instantly slid over my waist, tugging me in closer.
You smell like blood,
he murmured into the dimness. Sorry, I said. I'd washed my hands and forearms before sliding into bed, but a full bath. I'd barely managed to walk through the camp moments ago. He stroked a hand over my waist, down to my hip.
You must be exhausted.
And you should be sleeping, I chided, shifting closer, letting his warmth and scent wrap around me.
Can't,
he admitted, his lips brushing over my temple.
Why?
His hand drifted to my back,
and I arched into the long trailing strokes along my spine. It takes a while to settle myself after a battle. It had been hours and hours since the fighting had ceased. Reese's lips began a journey from my temple down my jaw. And even with the weight of exhaustion pressing on me, as his mouth grazed over my chin, as he nipped at my bottom lip, I knew what he was asking. Reese sucked in a breath as I traced the contours of his muscled stomach, as I marveled at the softness of his skin, the strength of the body beneath it. He pressed a feather-light kiss to my lips. "If you're too tired," he began, even as he went wholly still while my fingers continued their journey past the sculpted muscles of his abdomen. I answered him with a kiss of my own, another, until his tongue slid over the seam of my lips and I opened for him. Our joining was fast and hard, and I was clawing at his back before the end shattered through both of us, dragging my hands over his wings. For long minutes afterward, we remained there, my legs thrown over his shoulders, the rise and fall of his chest pushing into mine in a lingering echo of our body's movements. Then he withdrew, gently lowering my legs from his shoulders. He kissed the inside of each of my knees as he did so, setting them on either side of him as he rose up to kneel before me. The tattoos on his knees were nearly obscured by the rumpled sheets, the design stretched with the position. But I traced my fingers over the tops of those mountains, the three stars inked atop them, as he remained kneeling between my legs, gazing down at me. "I thought about you every moment I was on that battlefield," he said softly. "It focused me, centered me. Let me get through it." I stroked those tattoos on his knees again. "I'm glad. I think some part of me was down there on that battlefield with you, too." I glanced to his suit of armor, cleaned and displayed on a dummy near the small dressing area. His winged helmet shone like a dark star in the dimness. Seeing that battle today? It felt different from the one in Adriata. Reese only listened, those star-flecked eyes patient. In Adriata, I struggled for the words. The chaos of the battle in Adriata was easier, somehow. Not easy, I mean... I know what you meant. I sighed, sitting up so that we were knee to knee and face to face. What I'm trying and failing miserably to explain is... that attacks like the one in Adriata, in Valaris. I can fight in those. There are people to defend, and the disorder of it, I'll gladly fight in those battles, but what I saw today, that sort of warfare. I swallowed. Will you be ashamed of me if I admit that I'm not sure if I'm ready for that sort of battling? Line against line, swinging and stabbing until I didn't know up from down, until mud and gore blurred the line between enemy and foe, relying as much upon the warriors beside me as my own skill set. And the closeness of it, the sounds and sheer scale of the bloodbath. He took my face in his hands, kissing me once.
"Never. I can never be ashamed of you. Certainly not over this."
He kept his mouth close to mine, sharing breath.
"Today's battle was different from Adriata and Valaris. If we had more time to train you with a unit, you could easily fight amongst the lines and hold your own. But only if you wanted to. And for now, these initial battles, being down in that slaughterhouse is not something I'd wish upon you."
He kissed me again.
"We are a pair," he said against my lips. "If you ever wish to fight by my side, it will be my honor." I pulled my head back, frowning at him.
"I feel like a coward now." He stroked a thumb over my cheek.
"No one would ever think that of you. Not with all you've done, Feyre."
A pause,
War is ugly and messy and unforgiving. The soldiers doing the fighting are only a fraction of it. Don't underestimate how far it goes for them to see you here, to see you tending the wounded and participating in these meetings and councils.
I considered, letting my fingers drift across the Illyrian tattoos over his chest and shoulders. And perhaps it was the afterglow of our joining, perhaps it was the battle today, but I believed him.
Tarquin's army didn't blend into ours as Kyr's did, but rather camped beside it. Azriel led team after team of scouts to find the rest of Hybern's host, discover their next movement. But nothing. I wondered if Tamlin was with them. If he'd whispered to Hybern everything that had been discussed in that meeting. The weaknesses between courts. I didn't dare ask anyone. But I did dare to question Nesta about whether she felt the cauldron's power stirring. Mercifully, she reported feeling nothing amiss. Even so, I knew Rhys was frequently checking with Amarin and Velaris, asking if she had made any discoveries with the book, and even if she found some alternative way to stop that cauldron. We needed to know where the king was hiding the rest of his army first. And not so we could face it, not alone. No, so we could bring others to finish the job. But only once we knew where the rest of Hybern's army was, where I was to unleash Bryaxis. It would do no good to have Hybern learn of Bryaxis's existence and adjust its plans. No, only when that full army was upon us, only then would I set it upon them. The first 3 days after the battle, the armies healed their wounded and rested. By the fourth, Cassian ordered them to do menial tasks to stave off any restlessness and chances for dangerous grumbling. His first order? Dig a trench around the entire camp. By the fifth day, the trench halfway finished, Azriel appeared, panting, in the middle of our war tent. Hybern had somehow skirted us entirely, and sent a force marching up the seam between the autumn and summer courts, heading for the winter court border. We couldn't glean a reason why. Azriel hadn't discovered one either. There were half a day's flight from us. He'd already sent warnings to Callias and Vivian. Rhys, Tarquin, and the others debated for hours, weighing the possibilities. Abandon this spot by the border, and we could be playing into Hybern's plans. But leave that northward army unattended, and it could keep going north as far as it pleased. We couldn't afford to split our own army in two. There weren't enough soldiers to spare. Until Varian came up with an idea. He dismissed all the captains and generals. Kyr and Devlin, looking none too pleased at the order as they stormed out, dismissed everyone but his sister, Tarquin, and my own family. We march north, and we stay. Rhys lifted a brow. Cassian frowned. But Varian jabbed a finger on the map spread on the table we'd gathered around. Spin a glamour, a good one, so that if anyone walks by here, they see and hear and smell an army. Put whatever spells in place to repel them from actually coming up to it. But let Hybern's eyes report that we are still here, that we choose to stay here. While we march north under a sight shield, Cassian murmured, rubbing his jaw. It could work, he added with a grin to Varian.
You ever get sick of all that sunshine? You can come play with us in Velaris.
Though Varian frowned, something glinted in his eye. But Tarquin said to Rhys,
You could make such a deception?
Rhys nodded and winked at me.
With assistance from my mate.
I prayed that I'd rested enough, as they all looked to me. I was nearly drained by the time Rhys and I were finished that night. I followed his instructions, marking faces and details, willing that shape-shifting magic to craft them out of thin air, to give them life of their own. It was like applying a thin film over all those living in the camp that would then separate when we moved out, separate and grow into its own entity that walked and talked and did all manner of things here, while we marched into intercept Hybern's army hidden from sight by Rhys. But it worked. Cressida, skilled with glamours herself, worked personally on the Summer Court soldiers. She and I were both panting and sweaty hours later, and I nodded my thanks as she handed me a skein of water. She wasn't a trained warrior like her brother, but she was a solid, needed presence amongst the army. The soldiers looked to her for guidance and stability. We moved out again, a far larger beast than the one that had flown down here. The Summer Court soldiers and Kyr's legion couldn't fly, but Tarquin dug deep into his reservoirs and winnowed them along with us. He'd be wholly empty by the time we reached the enemy, but he insisted he was better at fighting with steel anyway. We found the Hybern army at the northern edge of the mighty forest that stretched along the Summer Court's eastern border. Asriel had scouted the land ahead for Cassian, laid it out in precise detail. It was late enough in the afternoon that Hybern was readying to settle down for the night. Cassian had let our army rest all day, anticipating that, knowing that the end of a long day of marching, Hybern's forces would be exhausted, muddled. Another rule of war, he told me. Knowing when to pick your battles could be equally as important as where you fought them. With rain-heavy clouds sweeping in from the east, and the sun sinking toward the trees behind us, sycamores and oaks that towered high, we landed. Rhys ripped off the glamour surrounding us. He wanted word to get out, wanted word to spread amongst Hybern's forces who was meeting them at every turn, slaughtering them. But they already knew. Again, I watched from the camp itself, atop a broad rim leading into the grassy little valley where Hybern had planned to rest. Elaine ducked into her tent the moment the Illyrian warriors built it for her. Only Nesta strode toward the edge of the tents to watch the battle on the valley floor below. More joined her, then me. Nesta didn't flinch at the clash and din of battle. She only stared toward one blacked armored figure, leading the lines, his occasional order to push or to hold that flank, barking across the battle. Because this battle, Hybern had been ready, and the appearance they'd given, of a tired army ready to rest for the night, it had been a ruse, as our own had been. Kyr's soldiers started going down first, shadows sputtering out, their front lines buckling. Mor watched it, stone-faced. I had no doubt she was half-hoping her father joined the dead now piling up. Even as Kyr managed to rally the Darkbringers, reassembled that front line, only after Cassian had roared at him to fix it. And on the other side of the field, Rhys and Tarquin were drained enough that they were actually battling sword to sword against soldiers. And again, no sign of the king, or Jurian, or Tamlin. Mor was hopping from one foot to another, glancing at me every now and then. The bloodshed, the brutality, it sang to some part of her. Being up here with me, it was not where she wished to be. But this running after armies, scrambling to stay ahead, it would not provide a solution, not for long. The skies opened up, and the battle turned into outright muddy slaughter. Siphons flared. Soldiers died. Hybern wielded its own magic upon our forces, arrows tipped in Feybane finally making an appearance, along with clouds of it that mercifully didn't last long in the rain.